Hello, everyone, and welcome back to episode 114 of the Savager and Karate Sports Podcast. Here for you on another lovely Wednesday night, 7:21 p.m. Before we get to moments of the week and all the good stuff that we have in a loaded show today, Ryan, how are we doing on another lovely Wednesday night?
I'm doing well on another lovely Wednesday night. No complaints.
No complaints besides the fact that it might be Xander Bogaerts' last game as a Red Sox.
Don't say that or I'll have to hurt you.
Pain.
I won't say what, but yes, for you, if you continue to act and think that way.
I don't know, man. I'm being real. It certainly seems that's possible, but
for some reason, I mean, we've talked about that before, just real quick. Because obviously, it is the last day of the Major League Baseball season. I don't know why. I mean, maybe it's I'm starting to take the cheese a little bit on Sam Kennedy and everyone talking about how much they appreciate Xander Bogaerts and how much they don't want to lose him. Maybe it's that. I just think that they might figure something out here and bring him back. They'd be dumb not to. Of course, JD Martinez hits two home runs today, so now it looks like he's the guy they should bring back next season as he hits free agency. So it's going to be a crazy offseason for the Red Sox. Obviously, we will not be touching on that at all. We'll just kind of do a quick MLB playoff preview. We'll save the free agency stuff for later on when maybe there's a little less to talk about, as you said, a lot to get out with the Bruins. Starting to ramp up a little bit more with the season starting. And then, of course, the Patriots and another quarterback that we get to talk about because the Patriots hate keeping quarterbacks alive this season.
Yeah, there's certainly a lot going on and a lot to get to. So, but yeah, moments of the week. I can't believe I'm talking about fishing on the
show. I have no idea what yours even is. So you're going to have to fill me in on what.
I can't believe you haven't seen this.
No, I don't.
There was this big fishing tournament. I don't know where.
Okay.
And there was a scandal once some of the fishermen in the competition found out that fish were being stuffed with metal balls and wrapped in fillet as like to hide it.
Okay.
To make the fish heavier to help their chances.
To help with the weight. Okay.
So like, I have so many questions. Is there an arena set in the water where like you can this ginormous arena like spanning this area of like fish you can choose from or fish in the area? Because like they're catching the fish with the weights in them, not just random fish that they might have missed and not put weights in. The funniest thing to me is that they're like disguising them with the fillet. Like, they won't find it if you
put that'll yeah, that'll there. That's it.
Also
yeah.
Also, how are the fish alive with metal balls in their body? I don't understand this at all.
No, they probably catch them, and then when no one can, I'm assuming no one can see them do it, stuff them on their boat or whatever. I'm assuming this is a tournament where you're on a boat, not just like on the side of like the shore or whatever. And then kind of dressing them up and going from there. I can't imagine. Like, yeah, there's no way they'd be catching it. They wouldn't be able to float, obviously, if they were in the water while they were doing this. Like,
yeah,
they,
I probably should have figured that out, actually, yeah. But I didn't.
Did you see this on Twitter? Like, I don't
saw
know.
It, I saw it, like, these guys were screaming at each other. Like, it got very heated. First off, like, I know, you know, it's a competitive environment, but these guys are freaks. Mm-hmm. Like, they looked like they wanted to kill each other over this and sounded like they wanted to kill each other. Like, was there like this ginormous prize involved in this tournament? Is that
probably
they're getting so mad? Like, it's a fishing tournament.
It's their livelihood, though.
Crazy. It was bizarre because, like, my stupid brain went to like the fact that they had the like fish somehow pre-stuffed with the. With the balls, but like yours makes way more sense. I don't know how I didn't pick up on that, but I don't know. I guess just having a little bit of wet brain here. But regardless, it's so funny to think of like all
people
the stuff these
losing their minds over fishing
and like, oh yeah, we'll put some fillet around it and then nobody will see it. Like, it's just ridiculous concept, a ridiculous type of event for this to happen at. And I thought it was worth mentioning because it was really funny, even though I clearly did not have all the facts.
I will definitely have to go look that up at some point. Cause now I'm very curious to see what the hell happens and what's going on here.
Yeah,
with this.
Look up like fishing tournament. It's pretty nuts. They go crazy.
Okay.
It's just a really funny scenario. My other moment of the week for anybody who didn't know or heard this story, I feel like a couple months ago, it came out. Minnesota Wild prospect Pavel Novak was diagnosed with cancer, and he announced that he beat the cancer today. So wanted to give him a shout out.
That's excellent.
Pretty good. Mm-hmm. He's for a young kid. That's probably you know, for anybody, but for a kid trying to like secure his future down the road, must be very unfortunate to have to deal with a cancer diagnosis and he beat it. So that's awesome. Felt that was worth mentioning. And while we're talking about hockey, do my little mix in Bruins segment every time we do moments of the week, which will change from here on out going on for future shows because the Bruins season will start, even though they're playing right now in the preseason. Oscar Steen was put on waivers yesterday, and I was kind of surprising. a little worried that he got what had gotten claimed. But like outside of the goal he scored against the Rangers last week, it sounds like I haven't seen enough to say for sure. It sounds like he's kind of underwhelmed.
Okay, so that was going to be my question for you. So
yeah, Montgomery said like they're just guys playing better than him too. So it's pretty black and white at this point with Montgomery's comments. Mm-hmm. But Steen goes through waivers unclaimed. A little bit surprised about that, but glad because Steen is a useful player. Nick Wolf and Connor Carrick were also sent down to Providence. Fabian Lysell, who's playing back in the lineup tonight, was out of the last preseason game, but he got shaken up on a hit by goofy idiot Rasmus Ristolainen, but luckily it was short term and he's back in the lineup tonight. Stanika just got plastered.
Yeah, he got fucking destroyed.
Yeah.
Not great.
But yeah, good to see Lysell back. Good to see it wasn't long term. Speaking of injuries that are hopefully not going to be long term, doesn't look like it. Taylor Hall could be back in the mix sooner than expected. He's week to week with an injury right now. Seems like they might be trying to get him back sooner rather than later, maybe sooner than expected, so that's good. Matt Grizzlick recently skated, so that's good to see him in the mix, obviously in the non-contact jersey because he's still got some recovering to do. And we're getting Jake DeBrusk with some looks on the left wing with Taylor Hall temporarily injured. So pretty nice there to see that instead of like Foligno getting the bump up or AJ Greer going right into the top six for a few games or like Trent Frederick. So I'm glad they did that. And it's also given us the opportunity for the check-in line, which I coined on this show, the check-in line being Zaka, Krejci, Pastrnak. Get it? They're all Czech. What else? That's really it. Zaka's playing tonight. I believe this is the first preseason game he's played in. So that's cool. It's going to take a little.
He's out there right now. I see him.
Yeah, it's number 18. Take a while to get used to an 18 that's not Bruins legend Greg McKegg. So,
oh, I was gonna say Nathan. I thought you were going with Nathan Horton, but all right.
Audible. I just realized my name at the top is still Ian Glendon. So
that's not gonna work.
To not give people the wrong idea.
Identity fraud is not a joke.
No, yeah, of course not. But yeah, of course, you know, nothing against Nathan Horton. Just making a goof. One of my favorite pictures in recent memory is the picture of like Jason Tatum and one of the bench guys they used to have celebrating on the sidelines, and it's Greg McKegg behind them. Hilarious. It's like Greg McKegg courtside, let's fucking go. It's awesome. But yeah, this is the right for real Bruins notes for anybody who hasn't been watching the game tonight. They let up an early goal. Miggy Zibanejad scored like 27 seconds in, but like a minute 30 seconds later, Jake DeBrusk buried a net front doorstep type goal. They like to see him score, hopefully get the scoring touch going before the season starts because they're going to need him to step up with Hall potentially missing the start of the season and Marchand being out for a little while. So hopefully Jake DeBrusk can pick up where he left off last year and start scoring right out of the gate. But yeah, it's 1-1, 4:06 left in the first period right now. They're playing the Rangers on TNT at MSG. So quick Bruins notes, but for anybody waiting on their, you know, on the edge of their seat for more hockey talk and dedicated hockey talk, it will come next week. It will. The season preview and all that fun stuff, and then we're rocking and rolling with Bruins talk and NHL talk every single week. So stay tuned for that. Your moment of the week is an adventurous one.
Absolutely it is. It's an adventurous one. It's a funny one, depending on how you look at it. It's one that I think should occur more in sports with the level of or the amount of the rise in just people jumping onto basketball courts or football fields or whatever. Of course, I'm talking about the Bobby Wagner, and not get enough credit either is Tack McKinley. He made a nice tackle on the play as well, but it's Bobby Wagner leveling that protester from Monday Night Football that ran, of course, onto the field in the game between the Rams and the 49ers. Great shoulder by Bobby Wagner. Didn't go dirty, didn't go high, clean hit. Like I said, Tack McKinley was also in on the tackle. Just again, another idiot running onto the field, and this time getting what they deserve. I don't know if you feel the same way as I do, but I think this is something that, as long as it's safe for the players, definitely should happen more. Like, if it's a football game, let the guy, you know, that's what he's paid to do, let the guy level somebody. If it's a basketball game, maybe, I don't know, somebody pull a Mike Milbury and take a shoe off and just start hitting people, or, you know, chuck a basketball at the side of somebody's head. Like, I'm all for this. If you're going to be an idiot, and a lot of people I saw at first thought this was a gender reveal, if you saw it with the person running onto the field with the smoke flare, like, if it was that, I would absolutely take it a step further and just start beating people up. But kudos to Bobby Wagner. Like, enough of this bullshit of people just thinking they can run onto the field. My question is, we did when we talked about this in the Timberwolves game, when that person chained themselves to the basketball court, or the glue stick. But the chain, more appropriately, like, how do you sneak that through security? How do you sneak a flare or a smoke flare through security? I've seen people have signs taken away from them.
It must be like the security guy meme where he's like,
yeah, just kind of pat down and
so nonchalantly.
I don't know where you would hide that. Maybe like in your sock or something, but
the worst part about this whole thing is everybody had the same tweets like gender reveals.
Yeah,
control. I saw that like 7 times. I'm like, all right.
Yep, it's not that. Like
shot the fuck.
It was another. I looked it up. It was another animal rights protest or activist. I saw.
I saw that video before any gender reveal jokes. I saw it. I was like, everybody's gonna mention how this is a gender reveal, aren't they?
Mm-hmm.
Oh my god, like. It's psychotic that tweets like that can get like 60,000 likes.
And everyone can jump on board, yeah. Do people
think that funny?
Yeah.
That's crazy.
Crazy. Because the same way I saw a bunch of those and I'm like, are people that stupid that they think it was a gender reveal? Like, first of all, who would be dumb enough to try that? And second, like, it was
a bunch of the whole situation. And retweeting those, a lot of like the people that'll see a funny joke and be like, this wins the internet for today. You broke Twitter. Like, shut the fuck
clearly up. Way too much time on your hands, but
I hate shit like that. Gender reveals got out of hand, bro. Shut the fuck up.
That was my big takeaway is thank you, Bobby Wagner, and again, Tack McKinley, who's not getting enough credit for just doing what I think a lot of pro athletes should be able to do. Like, hit them on the field and then take the idiots out back. And like I have here, like, if you want to pull a Myles Garrett and beat him over the head with a helmet, or pull a Mike Milbury, like I said, beat somebody with a shoe or a cleat or something.
Derwin James and like, pick him up and body slam them.
Yeah, that too. Like anything. Like it's gotten out of hands. I mean, again, it also goes in part to the security. Like, how do you let somebody sneak a flare into a football game? But just absolutely ridiculous. My other one was, of course, I can't go without mentioning, as much as we don't like the Yankees here. Aaron Judge, congratulations, obviously, to him on his 62nd home run. The other thing I wanted to briefly mention about that, too, was I just found it funny, all the people on Twitter and TikTok and everything that were basically crying anytime. I think I saw it a lot on Saturday for college football when Aaron Judge came up. ESPN would cut to his at-bat, and they kind of dual screen the college football game and Aaron Judge's at-bat. And everyone was all up in arms, like, I don't want to watch this. What do I care about this baseball at bat? Like, who gives a shit? It's a historic event. Like, they're not taking time away from your precious college football game or whatever you were watching on TV at the time. Like, it's a at bat that's going to take maybe a minute or two out of your programming. So I just found that funny. Everyone that was up in arms, that was like, I don't want to see this. Like, it's ridiculous. But yeah, like, kudos to him, now the all-time American League home run leader when it comes to, you know, history there. So good for him. And hopefully with the playoffs right around the corner, we'll be celebrating Yankees Elimination Day whenever that may come.
Yeah, we will be. My thing that like annoyed me, like it doesn't annoy me that much, is like that pitch he hit was very clearly a meatball. Like that guy just served him one up. Like,
mm-hmm.
I think that was because – I don't want to be too tinfoil hat-ish, but, like, he's not playing tonight.
Mm-hmm.
So, like, I imagine he would be playing tonight if he didn't.
If he didn't get, yeah, absolutely. Night. Yeah.
And they kind of, like, maybe there was some sort of understanding, like, oh, we'll give him a meatball to make sure he gets the record. Cause,
and then they can sit him down, crazy. Yeah. Well, the interesting thing about him not
– just, like, that pitch was too perfect.
It was a little bit. But, I mean, that was the thing, too. A lot of people were starting to get a little antsy when it came to – pitchers not giving up. I think the Blue Jays in one of his games after or before he tied for 61, they like walked him 4 times in a game and everyone was like, oh, just throw him a pitch down the middle. It's like, no, the Blue Jays are still very much in a playoff race. They don't want to be just handing the guy the record. So the fact that it came against the Rangers was kind of perfect. They're not playing for anything. Like, if you want to, I guess maybe if you want to serve him a meatball, that's maybe more understandable, but still, But I found that the interesting thing you said about him not playing today too is he was, I saw, might have been, was it 0.4 or 0.004 off of the batting title this year. So that was kind of interesting that with a chance to win a triple crown, they decided to sit him down. Obviously, he doesn't have a chance at that. But I think you and I can maybe not. We haven't really had a discussion on this. If Aaron Judge is your clear-cut MVP, because he's mine. I know Shohei Ohtani's had a great season. I'm not going to take anything away from that. But the people that still think Ohtani should be MVP after this, it's Aaron Judge. If a guy that hits 62 homers and drives in 130-plus can't win MVP because a guy pitched and hit in the season, what does somebody have to do to dethrone Shohei Ohtani as the MVP, in all honesty?
You can't argue against a guy that's hit 160 homers.
I don't think so. Like I said, he had a legit shot at the Triple Crown and maybe would have gotten to it if he didn't sit today. Like
think about it this way. It's like you could argue against Austin Matthews this year, but mm-hmm. Austin Matthews scored 60-plus goals, and he won the Hart Trophy.
True.
It's kind of one of those situations. Obviously, you don't have guys like Igor Shesterkin in this case being the goalie playing goalie hit forward Shesterkin play or Ohtani pitches and hits, but
true.
It's kind of one of those things where it's rarefied air to go 60-plus, so you just have to do it. It's just egregious if you don't.
True.
Unless Ohtani had 50 home runs and went 16-2 with 1.60 ERA or something.
Exactly. Even if he put up close to the same batting numbers as Judge did. If he hit 50 plus bombs, and again, I think he probably finished the year with, it might have been 14, 15 wins and a sub-3 ERA. So again, a stellar season for Shohei Ohtani, and arguably better than the MVP season he had a year ago. Aaron Judge, it's what he did all season. And again, when the Yankees faltered out of the All-Star break, Judge was the one that carried him to a lot of their wins. So he was the definition of the most valuable player. Where would that team be without him?
Yeah.
I think, again, I just think the debate should end with Aaron Judge. It's insane.
Have you seen any news about the guy that was going for the home run title in the Japan League?
I did not, no.
I forget his name. It's someone that starts with an M, but I think he went 64 straight at bats without a home run, going for the record home run. Can you imagine that?
No, that's
it. He set the record 59, I think. I could be wrong, but the Rangers just scored 2 goals.
I saw that.
The preseason, so.
Yep.
Kako kind of uses teammate as a screen there. That was interesting.
Mm.
But, yeah, that was just a little sidebar, but I forget what the guy's name is. I have no idea how to find it either.
I don't know. I'll have to look that up, and the fishing tournament thing that I'm very curious about.
Munetaka Murakami.
No idea. Yeah. But that's the guy.
59. This is the 13th. And it says he makes MPB home run history with his 55th blast of the season. What I swear I saw something about 59, but maybe it was just that. Maybe it's the amount of bats in between his 55th and 56th. I have no idea, but that guy is approaching 60 bomb territory in Japan. So credit to him.
Absolutely. It's not an easy thing to do no matter where you play.
Yeah, it's not. No way. Do we want to get to staying with baseball, our playoff predictions?
Yeah, really quick, because, I had a complete brain fart and didn't realize the MLB postseason starts on Friday. I believe it's the Blue Jays and Mariners, because I saw Alec Manoah, was named the game one starter for the Blue Jays, so they have theirs ready to go. Playoff picture is set, in case people missed it. The 6-seed Rays take on the 3-seeded Guardians in the wild card round in the American League. As I said, the Mariners and Blue Jays will do battle on the other side of it. Yankees and Astros being the 2-1 seed get the byes. In the National League, the Dodgers and Braves get the 1-2 seeds, so they have the byes for the division series. The Cardinals and Phillies are the 3-6 seed for the first wild card matchup, and the Mets and the Padres. The Mets kind of limped their way in after blowing a pretty big division lead to the Braves in kind of Mets fashion. They will have to play in the wild card round against, like I said, the Padres, the 4-5 seed. Starting with that wild card game, I'll run through mine. We'll jump into yours in a second. In the Rays-Guardians matchup, because it is a best-of-3 series. It's not a best-of-5 until you get to the division series. I have the Guardians winning that in a sweep, 2-0. Mariners and Blue Jays. The Mariners, I looked it up, actually killed the Blue Jays in the season series. They won the majority of the games. I can't remember exactly what the number was. I have them beating Toronto in 3 games. Phillies and Cardinals, I have the Cardinals riding Albert Pujols and potentially Yadier Molina's and Adam Wainwright's last year's as well. They beat the Phillies in three games, and then the Padres and Mets. Like I said, the Mets struggled getting in. They'll struggle in this series. I have the Padres winning that one three games as well.
Very nice. I have much different things.
Yes, you do.
I have the Rays in three. Wait, did I put the wild card's a three game series, isn't it?
It is, yeah.
Oh shit, I put the wrong games.
It's okay.
So that equivalent would be three. That would be two here. And that would be two. All right, let me fix that. That's okay. Fixed. I have the Rays in three over the Guardians. I have the Blue Jays over the Mariners in three. I have the Cardinals over the Phillies in two. And the Padres losing to the Mets in two.
Okay, so you are higher on the Mets than I am.
Yeah, I don't know. I went back and forth on that one, but I don't know. I feel like the Mets are at least going to get out of the first round after, you know, slipping to end the season. And
okay.
There's a lot of talent on that team. DeGrom is healthy, right?
He I is, yep.
Okay.
It's always a toss-up. It really is. I think he's fully back. I mean, that's, yeah, if they have a healthy DeGrom and a healthy Max Scherzer going games one and two in that series, yeah. It very well could end in two for the Mets. So I see where you're coming from. I just don't know. Like, they blew a 10.5 game lead in the division. The Braves swept them to really put the nail in the coffin. Like I said, they kind of limp in. It would just be so Mets to kind of finish off the choke job to lose a series that they probably should win against the Padres. Like you say, just, I mean, both teams are very talented, but in the end, you probably should like the Mets a little more than the Padres. And I just, like I said, I think the Padres maybe overcome and take them down.
Certainly you do not. It would be very Mets of them. It really
absolutely. All right, on to the division series then. For me, the way I have it matched up, the Guardians take on the Yankees. I have the Yankees in four, so Yankees elimination day does not occur in the division series at any time. Mariners and Astros, a division battle. The Astros, I think they sweep that series. They're an absolute powerhouse, and then they know how to win in October. The Cardinals and Braves, I have the Cardinals upsetting in four, and then the Padres and Dodgers, a series that should be very entertaining with how much those two teams seemingly despise each other. I have the Dodgers, though, taking it in the full five.
Very interesting. I think we're pretty different in this regard, too.
We are.
If I'm not mistaken. Mm-hmm. I have the Blue Jays over the Astros upset.
Big upset there, games. Yeah. Big wouldn't upset. Hate that.
I'm having some fun with these picks.
Absolutely.
I don't know about – I feel like the Rays are going to be scrappy, but I just don't know if they can beat the Yankees. Is Glasnow back yet?
He is. I don't know if he's 100%. I know he's had a couple of starts here late in the year to get back up to speed. I don't know how. I mean, with the Rays, who the hell knows how they use their pitchers in the playoffs? Glasnow could pitch one or two innings as a starter. Maybe they use him as a bullpen guy. Who knows? But he is back, yeah.
Gotcha. I got Dodgers in five over the Mets and the Braves over the Cardinals in five.
Okay. A lot of powerhouses you have. I'm going with a couple of upsets. I like one team in particular.
Hey man, I got the Blue Jays.
That's
Jays.
True. That's a big upset. I mean, I think I had the Blue Jays as my team to come out of the East at the start of the season. But as we
I'm
know,
pretty sure my World Series prediction was Blue Jays and Dodgers preseason.
So maybe we were both. I was either Blue Jays, Dodgers, or Blue Jays, Mets. It was one of the two.
I don't know
what yours was. Can't remember. It was a long time ago. We'll have to go back and look that up. On to the championship series, though. I have the two top teams in the American League, the Yankees and the Astros, 2-1. I have the Astros once again getting back to the World Series. Maybe a little bit of Astros fatigue, but I think they're the most complete team in the field. They take it in six. The MVP, Justin Verlander, I think he's got an opportunity with how righty-heavy the Yankees are to just shove in that lineup, and he was excellent at the end of the year. I think took a no-hitter late into one of his last starts of the year for Houston, so he carries that into the playoffs. And then the Cardinals and the Dodgers, I have the Cardinals, maybe the biggest upset of the playoffs. They take down the Dodgers in seven, and the MVP of that series is going to be Albert Pujols. Like I said, I think they ride that storyline of Pujols' last year, Molina's potential last year. I don't know if he's officially called it quits yet. And like I said, Adam Wainwright, too, could be out the door as well. So they end up in the World Series off the backs of some of their veterans.
Yeah, it's pretty crazy to think of them at the end of their careers, like, especially Molina and Pujols in particular. Like, they've pretty much played our entire lives.
Absolutely.
Like, I don't remember. I feel like Yadi was like, did he start playing in the late 90s? Is he that old, or am I grossly mistaken?
I can't remember. One of them I know was their rookie year, I think, was the year the Red Sox beat him in 04. It might have been Molina. I'm not 100%.
Yeah, he was 04. I thought
he was he? Like, okay.
I thought he was like 2000 or 99 for some reason.
Yeah. Pujols, maybe, unless I'm mistaken there. That 04 World Series might have been one of his second or third years in the league. But, and I don't think Wainwright, I don't think definitely was not around. I don't think during that time. So
Pujols was 01. Maybe I was mixing them up.
Okay.
But yeah, MLB rigged if the Cardinals win. So
it might be. I mean, I just, that's the one reason I don't like the pick, because I know some people will be like, oh, you're jumping on the storyline, and it'd be so perfect to have Pujols go out. Like, I don't know who would hate that, though. Like, if Albert Pujols goes out a World Series champion one more time, like, I can't imagine you'd find many people other than maybe the team that they beat that would be upset about that.
Yeah, I suppose. I have Blue Jays and Yankees in the okay. ALCS. I have Blue Jays winning in 7, Vlad Guerrero Jr. being the MVP. I have Braves and Dodgers. Didn't they play in the NLCS last year?
They did, yep.
I have
Dodgers. And the year before that, I think, or the DS, and that was when right. The Braves blew their big series lead.
Yeah, that sounds right. Mm-hmm. I have Freddie Freeman, and then I have the Dodgers in 6 over the Blue Jays, with Freeman winning the MVP again.
Okay.
I think it's going to be a big Freddie Freeman year.
Yes, you do.
Yeah, I very much do. Mm-hmm. I'm pretty sure Blue Jays-Dodgers was my pick with the Dodgers winning preseason. So
it was one of ours, if not both.
The lining nicely right now mm-hmm. with my preseason pick, so that's cool. But
yep.
Knowing my picks, I'll probably be wrong. So.
Yeah, I mean, with my luck, both my teams will get bounced in the first round. I have the Cardinals and the Astros, obviously, in the World Series. And like I said, might be cliche, but I am jumping full board onto the storyline aspect of things. I have the Cardinals upsetting the Astros. Like I said, they ride the storylines. They ride their veterans. And they win in 7. Paul Goldschmidt, I mean, I made this pick earlier in the day. Then I went back and looked at the stats. He's probably going to win National League MVP, so I don't know if I want to peg him as the World Series MVP too. It's kind of down between him and Arenado, so I know I have Goldschmidt in the outline, but I kind of want to change that, and I think I'm going to lean more towards Arenado, especially if Goldschmidt's the clear-cut favorite to win National League MVP as a whole.
Yeah, I don't know, like the Cardinals, I feel like they're another team, like if it's, I don't know how similar they are to the Rays, but they could be like the scrappy team in the NL. Yep. I think.
Yeah. There's a couple of those. I mean, them, the Guardians definitely are. The Rays definitely are. Although the Rays, I think, have lost like 9 of the last 10 going into the playoffs. So might not be the best time for them to get really, really cold. I'd love it if the Mariners can make a run, just because that team is so young and fun to watch. But there's a couple of really, really scrappy teams this year.
I like it. We'll see who's correct. Mm-hmm. We'd be remiss to not mention Eck while we're talking baseball.
Absolutely. Yeah. His last game. Yep. That just ended a couple minutes ago.
I don't watch a lot of Red Sox games these days, but like I'm much more inclined to watch a Red Sox game for
he's the reason too
time mm-hmm. because he's awesome. He's so funny. Like I haven't heard many announcers ever that like mix comedy into broadcasting just so effortlessly. Like
it's him and Orsillo, and like that's other than that, I can't think of many. I don't know, we don't watch a lot of other outside, obviously the Red Sox baseball, you know, broadcasters, yeah. But like. Those two guys are the first two, I think, that will come to a lot of people's mind when it comes, like yeah. you said, comedy and also being able to call a really good game.
Yeah, it's going to be, like, pretty much impossible to replace that charisma. Mm-hmm. So I'm going to miss Eck. I mean, this guy that's really embraced being a part of, you know, the Boston, you know, family and community that, mm-hmm. like, so, you know, Red Sox fans are crazy, and he knows how much he loves it here. And
yep, absolutely.
He's appreciated. So best of luck to him.
Yep. With him going and obviously the passing of Remy, I think the Red Sox best idea would probably be like they should probably blow that broadcast booth out. I've seen a lot of people say Mike Monaco should be the head guy, the head play-by-play guy. And then you mix in, I think Will Middlebrooks is the one that's going to replace Eckersley. And he's sounded pretty good the couple games I've listened to him. I know Uke has gotten a lot of, you know, good reviews and people like Uke, me being one of them. So Nesson, if they were smart, Monaco, Uke, Middlebrooks for the whole 162, if you can do that next year, because I think that would be a really good booth and, you know, have a lot of guys that know what they're talking about. And Monaco, I think, is way more exciting and way more energetic to listen to than Dave O'Brien. I feel like a lot of people probably share that same thought, but they won't. I know Dave O'Brien's probably coming back and, you know, he's going to be the head guy there. And then
I wonder what his contract's even like. So
who knows?
We'll find out, I guess, throughout the offseason. But
mm-hmm.
yeah, the Sox is – the game over? Did they officially?
They did. They won 6-3. So I think they finished with 79 wins on the year and still last place in the division. This game, I think, literally meant nothing today. Just I think from a a pride standpoint, go out with a win. Yeah, 78-84, last in the American League East, and a whole lot of questions coming up this offseason. Obviously, we saw Xander Bogaerts, if anybody watched the game, get taken out as well to a nice standing ovation. J.D. Martinez maybe played his last game in a Red Sox uniform. Eovaldi a couple nights ago, maybe his last start. So there's a lot of uncertainties and a lot of big decisions coming up with this team.
Yeah, I was trying to – I found this the other day, but we both had the Red Sox in the 90s for wins preseason. I think – no, I think I might have had 89 and you had 94.
Yeah, I was – I bit way too much into thinking they made a lot of improvements when – I mean, on paper they did, but it didn't really work out that way, and then injuries kind of derailed things, and you didn't get a full year of Trevor Story. They didn't get anything out of Chris Sale, like – a lot of it went down the drain quick.
Just a season of bad beats and underperforming. Mm-hmm. So
we'll also exclude where I had the Yankees finishing in the division and what I said about the Yankees and how they didn't make any offseason additions and that was going to cost them in the end. And it really didn't because they, I don't know if they won today. If they did, they reached 100 wins. They were losing last time I checked. So
yeah, maybe I checked. I had them finishing like fourth in the division. So
did you too? I thought okay. Yeah. I thought you were a little higher on them than I was, yeah. But I really went in on crap on the Yankees offseason plans, and it did not end up working out for me.
I'm standing firm on the no World Series thing. I've been preaching all year. I don't think
no this year especially. There's just way more things pointing towards it. Like Aaron Judge had a phenomenal season, stayed healthy. They got great performances from guys like Stanton and Gleyber Torres. So like a lot of things are clicking for the Yankees, and that just makes you wanna. Think that when it comes to the playoffs, like things just fall apart for them and fall apart very quickly.
It's a shame.
Mm-hmm. You hate to see it.
On to football. The Patriots managed to keep it close with the Packers with Brian Hoyer for a bit and Bailey Zappe losing 27-24 in OT, falling to 1-3 on the season.
As we predicted.
It's a weird game in terms of like how to feel about the team, but I think I have a good idea at this point.
Yeah, I do too. I mean, I've seen a lot of people throw the term moral victory around. I don't know how much you and I want to lean into moral victories because there were some good things to take away from this game, mainly being that Bailey Zappe was able to stay right with Aaron Rodgers up until the dying seconds of overtime. We'll get into that a little later, obviously, with the studs and duds stuff coming up first. But I don't know, your kind of opening thought on the moral victory thing. Do you give the Patriots a moral victory? Or are you like me where it's like they're 1-3 and there's still some questions about this team, particularly at the quarterback position, because still doesn't seem like there's a sign of Mac Jones getting healthy. I know he was at practice today, but you're probably looking at Zappe again on Sunday.
Yeah, I don't really like, I'm not on the moral victory side of things here, but like I kind of take it as like they're scrappy. That's fine. Like that's enough. Like it's better than just rolling over and dying.
Absolutely. Like, yep.
I don't really, for whatever reason that I can't really pinpoint, I don't really think of this as a moral victory type of thing. I just think scrappy and Zappe can lead the scrappy Patriots into, maybe mediocre enough play to like not be completely out of games, but I don't think they're really going to be winning games while he's in the lineup. It's just,
I can't imagine. Yeah.
The play calling was very conservative with him in the mix. And he's inexperienced. So like,
it's a recipe for disaster.
There's not like an unbelievable sense of optimism that he can like lead them past the Lions this week, who are scoring tons of points. But like silver lining, as we'll get to, is they can't really play defense. So
yeah, they are not a good defensive team whatsoever.
They have the most points scored in the league and are 1-3. So
It's a weird Lions. Sport, that's for sure. Lions. And they are a weird team. Lions. But
they are most definitely the Lions.
Yep.
Shall we get into studs and duds?
We shall, kicking it off with the studs as I do. I'm going heavy on the special teams. If you couldn't tell, if you looked at the outline, I'm sure you did. My first stud from the game was Marcus Jones, the punt/kickoff returner. And maybe put him as a stud just as the fact that we didn't have to see Miles Bryant out there kick a punt away or drop one or anything stupid. Marcus Jones was good in this game. He had two punt returns for 49 yards, an average of 24.5. And then on kickoff returns, he was even better, four returns for 111 yards for 27.8 on average. All of his returns looked explosive. He looked like, obviously he was trying to find the end zone on those returns. And like I said, just to the fact that he was able to handle the ball and didn't drop anything and didn't make any dumb decisions. In a game that was kind of tough to find some studs with how strange of a game it was, shedding some light on one of the Joneses, because one, if not both of them, the two that played out of the three, had a pretty good game.
Yeah, they both had great games in different aspects. That's for sure. I also had Marcus Jones as my number three stud. We might as well just roll him out because it's...
Oh, yeah. I didn't realize we have the same three.
Another one of those weeks where, like, there really wasn't much to pick from. Like, you could say Juwan Bentley, who had, like, nine total tackles, but, like...
Damian Harris had a decent day, ran hard.
Making, like, crazy plays, like, super timely, I feel like. Nothing that, like, stood out in terms of, like, memorability. And, like, no sacks, no tackling for losses, maybe if he you know, had some of those, he'd be in the mix. But I think this is, like, pretty consensus, like, where people will lean in terms of, like, the better players on the team. But, yeah, Marcus Jones, like you said, I'm glad you said it. He's not Miles Bryant. So, like, I'm
happy with the
whole Miles Bryant thing. Because, like, when he's not having subpar kick returns, he's being targeted by opposing quarterbacks because he's much smaller
than
the people he covers, and he's just not very good either. So it makes it an easy target for offensive coordinators to be like, hey, just throw the ball to where Bryant is covering because we'll probably beat him.
Yep.
It's a pretty apparent theme if you watch the game close enough.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, Marcus Jones is really good. Next up we have Matt Judon.
Yep, sandwiched in between the two Jones, spoiler alert. We'll maybe let people think of what Jones is number one, but if you watch the game, it was pretty obvious. Matt Judon, five tackles, had another sack again, starting off strong on the year with sacks, one tackle for a loss and one quarterback hit as well. Had a nice play to, you know, had his sack push Green Bay back out of field goal range when the Patriots were up 3-0. So that was a big play at the time there. Obviously, in the end, it didn't really matter because the Packers got the win in the end. But another solid day for Matt Judon. He was kind of all over the field, made some big plays as he usually does and has done. I think he's been on my studs list every week so far this season, maybe off of one, but great game for Judon. Anything else you wanted to add there?
Yeah, I mean, I'm glad it was him that stepped up in the pass rushing game because Dietrich Wise had his first, like, quiet week of the year.
Yeah, he was a little non-existent, but you give him a pass with how great he's played so far, especially coming off the 3-sack game last week.
Exactly, yeah. I mean, this is a game, you know, when you're facing such a good quarterback, you need to get pressure on him, so it was good to see Judon step up.
Mm-hmm. And then the number one stud, the consensus, the Jones sandwich, as you said, finishing it off. Jack Jones, seven tackles. I think that was a Patriot high looking at the game book. One interception, one forced fumble, one fumble recovery, and, of course, the 40-yard pick six. For coverage stats, he was 2 for 4 with 35 yards allowed. We didn't know that Jalen Mills wasn't going to play until the game. I think that surprised me, at least, that he was on the inactive list. So Jack Jones has to step into the – what happened? The Bruins score?
Zaka.
Oh, there you go. I turned the Celtics game on because I forgot there was a preseason Celtics game too. So
we have each of us watching a screen.
Yeah, there we go. But Jack Jones, he stepped into the cornerback two role without Jalen Mills being there. Obviously, Jonathan Jones slots into the one. Everyone moves up a little bit. Jack Jones played really well. This was from Doug Kide. He said, Patriots cornerback Jack Jones, 94.9 week 4 coverage grade, was the fifth highest single game mark by a rookie cornerback in the Pro Football Focus era since 2006. And then today I saw it. According to Pro Football Focus, he's the second highest graded cornerback in single coverage. He has a 90.8 grade, only behind Jonathan Jones with a 91.5. As you mentioned, I think last week on the show, Jonathan Jones has had a great season as well. But this game against the Packers, it was Jack Jones, who was picked on a lot by Aaron Rodgers, and he rose to the occasion more than once.
Yeah, it's awesome to see his first big game come against such a legendary quarterback. The interesting thing that I just found out about today about Jack Jones was the whole Ty Law thing. Did you see this?
I did not. What is the Ty Law thing?
Ty Law was not a fan of something in particular Jack Jones did in this game. He said, you make a couple plays, you get an interception, but to say something like that, you got to have some swag and go out there and make some plays. Law said while appearing on WEI's The Greg Hill Show on Tuesday, I don't think anybody in that secondary, especially a rookie, can say something like that. You ain't making enough plays to say something like that. Shut up. So Ty Law was not a fan of Jack Jones calling out a route.
Okay.
Which is interesting.
Very interesting.
How about that today?
That was the other point I was going to bring up about him, is he was kind of a little chip on his shoulder after the game with how much, you know, he thought he was being targeted. I mean, again, he's a rookie corner against Aaron Rodgers. Like, that you should know coming into that game, that's kind of going to be the MO. I mean, it's guys like Brady, Mahomes, they all do it. It's, you know, you see a potential weak link, you go after it. And like I said, he stepped up to the occasion. Now we'll see if maybe he gets put in his place next week. If he gets picked on and has a bad game and maybe can't back up the talk, you hope he can. Yeah. But who knows? We'll have to wait and see on that.
The, you know, you got to expect a guy that robbed a Panda Express in college to be a little bit of a wild card.
Yeah, I would think so. Yep. There were some character issues there. And I mean, I don't hate it. If he's going to play with a chip on his shoulder and play with some swagger, like, that's what this team needs. Like, you need a guy like that.
I like that. I prefer
absolutely that, play with some fire.
It's funny how, like, they, he's like connected to Panda Express because the same day you watched the Rick and Morty episode, you know,
I did.
First scene, they're eating at Panda Express. They're like, they knew it.
The Panda all Express, going according to plan. Yep.
The Panda Express prophecy has been fulfilled.
Yep.
We'll see what's next.
It's all connected.
Yeah, Jack Jones was awesome. Easily his best game so far as a rookie.
Yep.
By a long shot. Like you said, he rose to the occasion, got targeted a lot by a really good quarterback, and he played pretty well. So
he did.
Yeah. I mean, hopefully this is the start of things to come, because it's not like he's been bad to start the season, but like, this is definitely a huge step up from what we've seen. So
absolutely. All right. On to the more fun side of things, maybe to some with the negativity, onto the duds. Miles Bryant, we talked about him earlier. I have him on a dud. He was not doing it. No problems in the punt and the punt game, you know, the punt return, the kickoff return, because he wasn't there. He was forced into coverage in this game. Didn't do all that great. 3 tackles. I was 2 for 4 with 35 yards allowed. He got very lucky on the Romeo Dubs drop in the end zone. That would have been a touchdown. He would have gotten beat on that. That would have put Green Bay up 31-24 with just around 2 to play. And then a couple plays. He's a good receiver. Maybe he's a little washed. Maybe he's a little over the hill. He is old. But a couple plays where Randall Cobb just kind of left him on an island and torched him. Like, you can't be, when Miles Bryant's, what, 26, 27, you can't be having old man Randall Cobb run circles around you. And this was from Mark Daniels, too. Quarterback completion percentage versus the Patriots cornerbacks through 4 weeks. Jack Jones at 43%, 3 for 7. Jalen Mills, 54%, 7 for 13. Jonathan Jones, 54%, 7 for 13. And of course, the highest percentage on there, no surprise, is Miles Bryant at 55%, 6 for 11. You said it. He can't field kicks. He can't field punts. And he can't play corner. So I don't really know what else they really have in this kid, because it really is, anything he does, it's not good.
Yeah, he's not good. Like we said earlier, they target him. Teams target him because they know he's bad, and they know they can get size mismatches.
Absolutely. So
making it easier for whatever receiver it may be to capitalize on this. I will say this, talking about the secondary, I'm not going to start like freaking out about Devin McCourty, but like, there's another game he didn't look.
Yeah, like, not as bad as the Ravens game for sure. I mean, again, two different style offenses, two different speed wise teams, so you're gonna get torched when you play the Ravens a little bit here and there with their speed. But again, not a game that was all that noticeable for Devin McCourty. So
yeah,
I'm with you, not all that concerned yet, but there is definitely some eyebrow raising when it comes to his play of late.
A little bit. I alluded it earlier. I put Deidre Wise in my number 3 dud because I think he just had a quiet game. It's really it. Like, it wasn't like a bad game, but he just, you know, didn't pop as much as he has so far this season. So I put him as my number 3 dud, but not like a terrible performance from him.
You're not mad that like this is a horrible performance from, like, we probably going to be with our number 1 dud that we'll get to in a minute, because it is actually my number 1, your number 2, because you went a different way with the 1. My number 2, though, maybe I'm nitpicking here. I wanted to get your thoughts on this guy because it has not been a stellar season for the level of, you know, performer we've come to know him as. Jake Bailey had 7 punts in this game for 314 yards, 44.9 average, had 2 touchbacks, 2 within the 20, and his longest was 62 yards. It was not a great game from him, though. I know 2 for 7 when it comes to, you know, punts and touchbacks, maybe not the worst thing possible, but he had a punt that went, 31 yards. It was a shank that he punted from the New England 26 and went out of bounds to the Green Bay 43, so not a great punt there. Had a couple of other short punts as well. And then I went and looked this up today because I was curious about the whole touchback thing, because I did see somebody tweet out that Jake Bailey's, he's just punting balls into the end zone this year. On the season, I don't know if you knew this, Jake Bailey has 4 touchbacks and 16 punts. He had 6 touchbacks all of last season. So maybe something, some concern there, because the last couple of weeks, Jake Bailey has not had a great performance in this game, too. A couple of really, really bad kicks. Any concern with him moving forward, or it's just kind of the punter? Hopefully he figures some things out.
Yeah, I can't really get too worried about a punter.
Okay. Yeah, that's what I said. See, nitpicking, like, just to be different, throw him on there.
Yeah.
Okay.
But, you know, I definitely think he's worthy of some dud consideration.
All right.
Yeah, you, as you clued out a little bit, have him as your number one, but I have Isaiah Wynn as my number two dud.
Mm-hmm.
You just mix and match here.
Yep.
On this. He's just really bad.
He sucks.
Like,
it's not sugarcoated. I don't think it's too far-fetched to say he might be the worst right tackle in football. At least for the season, he's had to start.
He takes penalties at, like, these poor times, too.
Yep. Like, Bailey Zappi's first snap in the NFL, already on, like, the 10. Now you push him into the end zone. Yeah. Like,
he's not a smart football player. He's just not. It sucks to watch.
Mm-hmm.
It really does. He got benched from Marcus Cannon. The corpse of Marcus Cannon.
Should be a wake-up call right there that you can't.
The corpse of Marcus Cannon playing, and now we're going to have the corpse of Jamie Collins playing.
Like, mm-hmm. That's where this team's at right now. They're getting horrible linebacker play, and they're getting horrible, horrible right tackle play to the point where, like I said, you might have three quarterbacks dead by week five with the way they're going. Like, even the strip sack, it was his fault on Isaiah Wynn. Zappi got crunched up on that. We were watching that game. It's like, Jesus Christ, can you protect the kid? Because you have nobody else to play quarterback if he goes out. Like, Myers was inactive. Like, who the hell knows?
The Lions are absolutely going to line Aiden Hutchinson up a ton on the left side. Oh,
they'd be dumb not to.
To blow by Isaiah Wynn. So I'm worried about Bailey Zappi. I am.
In that case, I might just, like, I don't know if it's too far fetched to say, I might lean towards starting Marcus Cannon. Like, continue to send the message to Isaiah Wynn. I know you said that he got benched for the corpse of Marcus Cannon. Start Cannon in this game to win. Get your head out of your ass. Because, like I said, you're getting quarterbacks killed in this so far. It was Hoyer, you know, it was his side. Wynn was the one that got blown by when Hoyer went out with a concussion. Mac Jones has gotten hit numerous times because of Wynn so far this season. You said it, two more really stupid penalties. Like, it's not been a great season for him so far. And this is from Mark Daniels, the pass protection from through 4 weeks. Isaiah Wynn so far, 3 sacks, a quarterback hit, which seems low. You would think he'd have more quarterback hits on there, and 3 holding penalties. And then this is from Pro Football Focus, had a 21.2 pass blocking rating on Sunday. Everyone else was in the 80s. That just goes to show you how poor of a day Isaiah Wynn had.
Yeah, I don't enjoy watching him. I haven't for a while.
No, it's tough. And
yeah, like we clued at, that was your number one dud. Number one dud was the run defense as a whole. I thought it was just way too easy for particularly
a lot of big holes, yep,
as well, to just carve them up at like any juncture of the game they needed to.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I felt like there weren't many like consistent run stops by the run defense.
Nope.
And that definitely comes from losing Lawrence Guy. But, like, I need more from the run defense. I know it's 2 good running backs, but, like, Jones runs for 16 and 110. That's almost 7 yards a carry. Dylan runs for 17 and 73, which is just, like, 4.5, I believe, around 4.5. Mm-hmm. And Christian Watson had the 1 carry for 15 that got into the end zone. So, just need more from the run defense. I think it was a huge momentum shifter. You know, I feel like a lot of times the Patriots, you know, had the Packers when they wanted them, like kind of, you know, making plays on defense. Then any time they wanted to run the ball and get a big gain, they could more often than not. It just really screwed things up and extended a lot of drives that, you know, could have been stopped.
Yep.
With some better play. So I'm putting the run defense as number one as a whole.
I don't think it's too crazy to say. And like, I agree with you. I think not having Lawrence Guy was a huge miscue there. And like I mentioned, you're getting not great play from, you know, the inside linebackers. That's why I think a big reason why Jamie Collins is back here, as you mentioned, the corpse of him now back on a fourth tour with the Patriots, the defensive tackles, Christian Barmore, a guy that we had a ton of high hopes for going into this season. He's kind of been non-existent this year. I know he had a couple of pressures, I think, in this game, but you know, he hasn't, you know, shown up like we thought he would. And then Devon Godshaw, who they gave an extension to, he's done nothing so far this year. Like, I forget he plays half the time. You know, just to see him in the box score, I'm like, oh, that guy was out there a couple times, I guess. But yeah, not uh, not great. It hasn't been great all season. You know, the Patriots have been a pretty easy team to run on so far this year, and that's probably going to be the case again facing, you know, Jamal Williams. If Swift can go, maybe at 100%, but still, that's a decent running back you're going to have to worry about. So their problems could continue into this Detroit game coming up.
Yeah, I mean, they have one of the better handcuffs to their starter in Jamal Williams. So either way, you're getting a good back. Bailey Zappe.
Thoughts on him? Yeah.
I thought he did pretty well overall with what he was given for play calling, but he did have a couple just bad misses, like just throws a rough target. Pretty easy looks.
First couple of throws, he loved pulling the Cam Newton and skipping it at guys' feet. Maybe that goes into nerves, but the Bruins tie the game up.
Yep, pasta.
Okay.
The check line, 2 goals.
I was going to ask you, I don't know if you, this is completely off topic, but because you're on the NHL and TNT, again, I don't know if you follow our friend on Instagram, but have you seen the Fanatic commercials, the jersey sales or whatever? I think it's Fanatics is the commercial where they do the jerseys. Where they do the jerseys and everything.
Everything is right. Crazy.
The check line. Yeah.
What were you getting at?
I said, have you seen, I saw it earlier on TNT, I think it's Fanatics is the jersey company or the memorabilia company that they show during the TNT. Next time that commercial comes on, to the Fanatics one where they show the team apparel and stuff.
Oh, with the one that PFT commenters in, that one, or is that?
That's a different one. I know which one you're talking about. There's a new one where it's just fans with jerseys.
Oh, keep an eye on... I hate those.
Oh, but I was gonna say, keep an eye on that commercial. And when they get to the Vegas Golden Knights, the girl that's in that that commercial, we know that person.
I saw that.
Yeah.
Yep. I saw that. I just completely forgot about that. I was watching.
We know a famous. On. Yeah.
I had the Bruins on. I was like, I know that girl in the Vegas jerseys.
That somehow would be Amy from Merrimack. Amy Puccini. Yeah,
I don't know her.
Shout out to her.
Yeah, I know. I know you knew her and like bumped into her a
few times. I saw right before we went on, I saw that commercial. I was like, holy shit, I know that person. I know somebody famous. How about that?
Pretty wild.
Complete sidebar. But yeah, back on Bailey Zappe and his game.
Yeah, I mean, he did what he had to do. It was a pretty conservative set of plays he had to work with throughout his time in the game. And outside of a couple, you know, misses that were pretty bad, I can be honest, like, he was okay. Like, it could have been a lot worse.
Absolutely. I mean, I said the same to my dad, and I both said the same thing as soon as we saw Hoyer go out with the concussion. We're like, well, this game is very over. Like, the Packers are going to run away with it. Zappe's going to come in and be scared shitless playing at Lambeau against the Packers, against Aaron Rodgers. And like we said, his first snap of his career, he has to get back to bit in the end zone on a holding penalty. You know, it's like you said, a solid game for him. Doesn't even throw for 100 yards, which I saw a lot of people listen to Zolak and Bertrand and everybody call in this week and say, you know, Zappe should play over Mac Jones if Mac Jones can come back, or like, let's pump the brakes on that a little bit. Like, Zappe was okay. He wasn't anything special. Again, didn't even break 100 yards. You mentioned it, missed some throws he probably should have had, but again, that comes with nerves. So a very serviceable game, definitely thrown into the circumstance he was thrown into. A historic performance from him, as I tweeted out, you know, he's the first ever quarterback to throw a touchdown pass with -3 seconds on the play clock. I think that was something that probably should be talked about more, and it probably is. You know, I haven't heard a lot about it post-game, but definitely during the game, they made a point to bring it up that the Patriots probably should have been flagged for a delay of game penalty. And that's kind of why I'm not on the whole, as we circle back to it, the moral victory type of thing. Because, you know, the Patriots got a gift of a touchdown. Like, I asked a question to some people I work with that I want to get your thoughts on. You know, the way this game played out with the Packers beating the Patriots in the, you know, the dying 4 seconds of overtime against the third string quarterback, does that say more about the Patriots and how scrappy they were, as you mentioned? Or does it say more about the Packers that, you know, there is some struggles with this team? You know, the fact that they couldn't beat this team, like I said, with a third string quarterback until the final four seconds of overtime.
I think it says more about the Packers.
Okay, good. I'm glad you're in agreement. Everyone else disagreed with me. And we're like, oh, it says about the Patriots. You know, it shows they can fight with anybody. Again, they shouldn't even have been in overtime. Like, their touchdown should have been called back. Like, they legit, 3 seconds off the play clock, and they score a touchdown. Like, it's just, I don't get it. I'm with you. It's on the Packers. That team offensively has some problems and never should have been in that spot in the first place.
It's like, it's interesting. You have the the whole like play clock scoreboard thing with Rodgers against Brady.
Yeah, that's, I didn't even think of that. That's a great point.
Play clock reversal of fortune for the Patriots against Rodgers the next week. So it's just, I love Bailey Zappi already too, because like Mike Reese asked him a question about like how it feels to have like the media scrum. He's like, oh, I just like pretty much like, oh yeah, it just makes me happy. I like talking to y'all. And I'm like, oh, we have just a good yeah. Southern boy back.
Yeah, here. It's just, yep. But yeah, that was from? That picture was.
From, I wonder if he's from Kentucky where he played.
Oh, maybe. Exactly. I don't know.
He's from Victoria, Texas.
Okay. So, yeah, Texas boy. But yeah, I mean, that picture was wild. The amount of people at his locker. Like, I can't imagine him thinking 5 weeks into his NFL career he'd have any sort of media attention, let alone every single reporter for every media outlet that covers the Patriots, it seemed like, at his locker for, like you said, a game ahead of the Lions.
Yep. Now he gets to face off with Jared Goff.
Jared Goff maybe has turned a corner and definitely helped me get my first fantasy football win last week. Like, I leaned on him pretty heavily. But the other thing too, I want to get your thoughts on really quick, because this was talked about before we transitioned into, you know, the overall week four thoughts in the Lions game. You mentioned it, the Patriots got a little conservative, or a lot of conservative, with the play calling in overtime. Interesting that it came almost a year to the date of when they got a little too conservative with Mac against the Buccaneers. That game was on October 4th, week four of last season. And of course, as we remember, they decided to kick a 56-yard field goal with Nick Folk instead of going for it on 4th-and-3. This time they get the ball at the 50 pretty much and run a couple run plays. And then the 3rd-and-5 desperation pass that falls incomplete. Again, like at that point, you're playing with house money, 3rd-string rookie quarterback. Let the kid throw it. If he makes a mistake, he makes a mistake. Again, you never should have been in that spot in the first place without the game went down. I don't get why they continue to do this with people and their young quarterbacks. Maybe it's to protect them from making a big mistake. But at that point, like you've got a game that you could win on the road in Green Bay against Aaron Rodgers. Like we said, the fact that they were even in that game with Zappi in there is ridiculous. And again, it's a game they just kind of punted away. And I don't know if you had any overarching thoughts on that.
Yeah, I think it ties into the conservative play calling for your inexperienced QBs thing again.
Mm-hmm.
That's why I really,
which they got to get out of them. Like,
yeah, I get it more in this case than last year, even though, you know, Mac was a rookie last year too.
Mm-hmm.
But like, we're talking about a first round QB versus a fourth round QB designed to be a backup.
True.
So yeah, I mean, it's probably like a situation where like they didn't really, well, in this case, hopefully, you know, I think they would have loved to get the game out of Hoyer to not, you know, thrust Zappi into Lambeau Field in week 5 of his NFL career. But I think it was just kind of damage control, trying to move the ball conservatively, and it didn't work. But what can you do? It doesn't really like piss me off like it is some people, because it's what I expected. Once we got to OT, I'm like, they're not going to do anything crazy. They're going to keep with this conservative play calling and see if it works. It didn't. So to even take the Packers, you know, it goes back to the moral victory thing. I like that, but I wouldn't consider it like a moral victory. I like that, you know, they kept this game close. But at the same time, it kind of comes back to the other point as well. It's like the Packers are also just not as good as they usually are. So like in a different season, the Packers are burying you. So like, it's one of those things you got to think about with context.
True.
If that makes any sense.
It does. Yeah. I mean, the big thing that stood out for me is just the back-to-back runs. I get you were running the football well all game. So when you're running it on first down to get 5 yards, it's not a surprise. I think 2nd-and-5, you could have tried to throw it there. I think a slant over the middle, something quick to maybe get Zappi, you know, feeling comfortable in overtime, get him going. But the fact that you ran 2 straight runs and the second one obviously went for, I think, nothing, like that just kind of showed you that, like you said, like, all right, they're playing conservative. They're not playing to win the game. They're playing to, you know, not playing for a tie, but definitely it seemed like playing not to lose. And that kind of irked me a little bit, but again, I get where you're coming from, where it's like you're kind of playing with the hand you were dealt there. But
yeah, I wonder if having Jacoby Myers would have changed anything.
Yeah, maybe that's a good point.
Reliable, and he's a good guy for slant routes across the middle of the field when you could have used one or two there in OT in particular. But
true.
Hopefully for Zappi's sake this week in a game that could be a shootout, given the fact that the Lions score just tons of points every week. Whether Zappi can keep up or not remains to be seen, but it'd be nice to get Myers back this week, especially if Amon-Ra St. Brown and or DJ Chark are out again for New Orleans. So we'll get to that after our overall week four thoughts, though. Because, I mean, this was a weird-ass week. The 1 o'clock slate was terrible.
It was, yeah. That was maybe one or two good games. Other than that, like, a lot of mid-tier games. I mean, maybe on paper, the worst one going in was probably the best one, the Seahawks and Lions game. Like, the fact that it was 48-45 and just a boatload of points and no defense in that game played whatsoever. Like, that might have been the more entertaining out of all of them. But everything else, like, Jags and Eagles ended up not being a half bad game. Like, Raiders and Broncos wasn't terrible, but like everything else. I mean,
Falcons was close, even though like two tough teams.
Mm-hmm. Same thing, Jets and Steelers. That one was close too. Came down to the wire, but like, how invested are you in the Jets and in the Steelers when that game's on? Like, it's was not a great slate for games. At least, like you said, some of them ended up being half entertaining ones.
Yeah, at least that's good. Starting with Thursday Night Football, all the stuff that has come out about Tua was crazy. Seeing the fencing reaction was so scary.
Yep.
With his fingers, apparently, like, some doctor had said, like, they'd recommend Tua to retire.
I did see that today. I didn't know if that was a true report or not, or that was just someone speculating, but
I don't know if that was the case or not. I probably should have looked into it a little bit more, but, like, yeah, this was told to retire by CTE expert Bennett Omalu, and the movie Concussion is based off of his studies.
Okay, so there's some merit behind that then, but like,
yeah, this looks real. It seems, yep. Yeah, I think it's real.
And obviously, as we know, things have come out that it was the head doctor that quote unquote cleared him has since been fired by Miami. I don't think it should stop there. Like, that's definitely, I think they're still investigating them, right? The Dolphins and everything. If you know or have heard anything else that, you know, everything that's gone on, but that this is something that never should have, you know, happened in the first place. You know, Tua, after we discussed it 2 weeks ago, him kind of stumbling off the field, not kind of absolutely stumbling off the field. And then it comes out after the game that he's just dealing with a neck/back injury. Like, we knew as soon as that came out, that was a load of crap. And then you see this, like you said, and how absolutely terrifying it was. Like you said, watch his hands kind of clench up and Amazon go to the replay 5 or 6 times, which was, again, kind of a stupid thing to do, but that was the biggest thing. I mean, this was, other than that, a good game. But like, that kind of overshadows just the stupidity of the Dolphins for even allowing this to happen in the first place. Like,
pretty brutal. Yeah.
Yep.
Yeah. You noted in the outline, T. Higgins went off. Ja'Marr Chase.
Any concern for him? I've seen some people getting a little worried, more so fantasy point wise with him. No, so I know we don't talk a ton of fantasy football, but no.
I mean, Justin Jefferson had a bad week too.
That's true. And he came back.
That happens. Yep. I mean, like, some people will consider a bad week for Ja'Marr Chase having 81 receiving yards. So like,
that's what I was looking at, because I couldn't catch the end of the game because I had to go to work. But that's what when I got back and saw they had 81 yards and there were still people complaining, I'm like, that's not that terrible of a game. Like, I know the week before he had like 23 or something. Yeah, that was bad. Game, but
he had like 3 for 23, but he still got in the end zone. Like, he'll be
exactly
fine.
Yep.
It feels like that this is all just gonna lead up to like him in the next few weeks having one game.
Yeah,
that I see this is coming. Like 11 for 210 and like 2 touchdowns.
Two to three touchdowns. So who was that against last year? The Chiefs, right? They just need to match up with the Chiefs. Yeah. Because they don't know how to cover that man.
Yeah, and their secondary is a little different this year with no Tre'Davious Ward.
True.
What's his face?
The Honey Badger.
So yep. They're going to rely on Rashad Fenton and L'Jarius Sneed and guys like that. And not Trent McDuffie because he's hurt. I was about to say Trent McDuffie. But, the Bengals pulled this off. I think I missed, like, most of the fourth quarter.
Mm-hmm.
I was, like, dozing off and eventually fell asleep, couldn't stay up. But, yeah, good win for the Bengals. But, you know, have to imagine it'd be a little bit of a different story, or at least closer if Tua, you know, weren't unfortunately injured in one of the more scarier injuries I've ever seen.
Yep.
So, you know, shit happens. And, you know, unfortunately, this whole situation was handled so poorly.
Mm-hmm.
It could have ruined his career.
Absolutely. Yeah, absolutely.
There's no saying whether this lingers or not. So it could be prevalent down the road. Hopefully it isn't for Tua. But next up, Browns and Falcons, two gross teams, but like not a terrible game. Nick Chubb is still nasty. Thank God I have him on both my teams. I also have Tyler Algier on my dynasty team. I took him in like the third or fourth round this year. So might start him at one of my flex spots this week, but I don't think so. They're playing the Bucks, aren't they?
Yes, yeah, they I are. Believe yeah, so.
Definitely. Definitely
not. Yeah. Although, I mean, the Bucks defense didn't look all that great last week. Granted, that was against the Chiefs, but they were able to run on them, which was kind of surprising. So maybe not the worst choice. Maybe it will be.
I don't feel confident.
Yeah, I was going to say, Al-Jair versus CEH, two totally different types of running backs. Like,
yeah, Al-Jair is a thick boy, so maybe it'll help him. He's a little bit of a chonker. Mm-hmm. Not in a bad way, but he's got some power to him. Low center of gravity, not the biggest guy. Yep. Cordarrelle Patterson plays on IR post game, so that stinks, but it's going to open up opportunities for Algier. So hopefully for the Falcons' sake, it doesn't hurt them too much. I didn't catch like a ton of this game, so I don't have a ton to add other than that, really.
Yeah, I didn't see anything of it. I meant to go look at the box score today because I could have sworn I saw on Twitter that the Falcons won the game, and why am I drawing a blank on their quarterback? Marcus Mariota had like 7 completions for the entire game, so that's kind of wild. But, I mean, the Falcons' whole offense, it seems like it's kind of prioritizing running the football, which makes sense when you have guys like Patterson and Al-Jair. Kyle Pitts, again, I saw was non-existent. That was a huge reason why I won this week. He got like, I think had one catch for 35 yards, and that was it. So they continue to not know how to use their, number 3 overall tight end when they drafted him, so...
Pitts was fourth.
Okay, so one, yeah. But still, like, you use that guy, a fourth overall draft pick, to block. He's kind of ridiculous. Like, the amount of talent he has, that they need to figure that out for any, you know, his sake or just their sake when it comes to start winning more football games.
Yeah, we'll see, man. The Falcons are so weird. People like saying, like, the Falcons are, like, good. Like, kind of good, but, like, even though they're bad. The second line again. Every single player on the second line has scored.
Every David time I turn that game off, they score a goal.
Crazy. Oh, goodness. They're going off. On poor Jaro Halak, fellow countryman. Is Halak Czech or Slovak? I don't remember. Jaro Halak is from Slovakia, so I was wrong. Close enough, though. They're pretty much, like, I feel like they're the same thing. But I don't know. Where were we?
Cardinals and Panthers, another game that was kind of, who really cares?
Dude, Baker Mayfield sucks balls.
Like I have here, if it wasn't for the Texans, the Panthers would be the worst team in the NFL. They're so bad.
Dude, they, like, this was the year Baker had to, like, actually play good. Like, he's done.
Silence some naysayers, and he's arguably off to a worse start than he did last year. I thought I saw a stat. He's one of the worst, might be either quarterback rating or just rating in general. From a number standpoint, quarterbacks in the NFL this year, like, he has been absolutely horrible. And the fact that I thought it was kind of telling that I think it was Matt Rhule that came out and said that just out of nowhere that Sam Darnold isn't close to coming back anytime soon. So, like, tell me that you want to get rid of Baker Mayfield as soon as you possibly can without telling me that. Like, I found that kind of interesting that they just out of nowhere was like, oh yeah, Sam Darnold isn't progressing all that well. He's not really due back anytime soon. So we're going to have to continue to go with the crap that is Baker Mayfield.
PJ Walker era starting soon, spin zone.
They got to do something because, I mean, there is
Mac Jones is, or
no hope Jones, for that
Matt,
team.
Matt Corral is going to miraculously recover ahead of schedule and come back. And
yeah. Nope. But yeah, I mean,
he's so bad.
Yeah.
I was rooting for him too. Like, the whole Browns situation must have sucked. I was like, I kind of hope he does good. But
Browns might have been onto something there. Like,
he sucks.
Yeah. Not great. Not good for him, Christian.
Like,
yeah.
Man, he was just so good in college and looked really good as a prospect, first overall pick, and just hasn't really clicked super consistently for him. But yeah, I didn't see a ton of this game. Hollywood Brown had a big one.
Mm-hmm.
Rondell Moore was back, I think, but I don't know if he really did much.
I heard Kyler had a pretty like pedestrian game. Other than that, like, this was not one that was really worth watching because it was a whole lot of suck when it came to it
for me, really.
Mm-hmm.
I'll get more interested in the Cardinals when D-Hop comes back. But we still have time for that. Yep. Titans and Colts. The Colts just, like,
you. They stink, too.
They're the mega unpredictable team this year because they go from getting shut out by the Jaguars, who are scrappy and good this year, kind of, to beating the Chiefs to losing to the Titans, who they definitely could have beat. But big reason they lost.
This was my tie game, I predicted.
Derrick Henry. Yeah. Was it?
Yes. Yep.
Why did I think? I don't know why.
It was either this one or the later on.
I think your tie was week 9.
Maybe it was week 9, but I know it was Titans and Colts that were the two teams. but
I don't know. Do they play week 9? I don't know. But Jonathan Taylor dealing with an ankle sprain, or like, I think he's got two leg injuries.
He's they he ruled him out today. I saw he's not going to play on Sunday. So avoids a high ankle sprain, but did not avoid a injury that will not keep or will keep him out, rather. So
am I the only one that, like, when I think of turf toe and I'm talking about this with Treylon Burks, I think of like a rug burn for some reason. Like, you get like,
I do too. Burn. I always, whenever I hear turf toe, I'm like, yeah, whenever I hear that, I'm like, not that it's a fake injury, but I'm like, it just sounds silly to me. And then anytime you hear it, it's like, oh, this person's going to be sidelined for weeks, maybe months with turf toe. It's like,
what? It doesn't sound proportionate.
Yeah.
Turf toe is an injury in the big toe joint when ligaments, tendons, and soft tissues in the joint stretch or tear. It's a common injury amongst football players who sprint or jump.
Okay, so that's where the turf part of it comes in. But I was going to say, it's like, you think with as severe as an injury as it sounds, you get maybe stray away from as goofy sounding as turf toe is.
Yeah, like for the longest time, like, I never bothered to look it up, but like, this sounds like just like a minor like toe injury, but it's not.
Mm-hmm.
It's just that turf toe sounds like a rug burn equivalent to like burning your foot.
Yep.
Like scraping across turf to me. It's really stupid, but like, that's just how my brain is sometimes. Yep. So I'm glad I'm not the only one that kind of feels that way, though.
I'm right there with you. I thought the same thing. I thought it was like maybe like when you fall on concrete and kind of like scrape up your arm or your leg or whatever. Like, I figured it was like somewhat the equivalent to that, but on a maybe more, not severe, but a worse off thing. But
yeah. Cowboys and Commanders, mark this down, because I think the trend is just going to keep going. Matt Ryan is going to retire after this year, and Cooper Rush
is going to the Colts. New
QB of the Colts.
Okay. We'll pin that at 8:33 on October 5th. All right. We have it in the records that,
like,
your prediction for the next, I mean, it's a very big possibility. Like, Cooper Rush should probably be a starter in the NFL. He's looked really, really good so far. So much so that I've seen maybe some rumblings that people think he should start over Dak when Dak gets back. Like, that's kind of silly. But he's been good.
The funny thing of the Colts is Nyheim Hines coming out, like, essentially, like, not making excuses, but we have a new QB every fucking year.
That's true. I can't imagine that's
it. I think it was him.
Whoever it was, he's 100% right. Can't have a recipe for success there, no matter, you know, it's Philip Rivers. It's not like they're bringing in schmucks. Like, Rivers was a good quarterback.
Matt Ryan is terrible.
Matt Ryan's bad. He's talk about quarterbacks falling off a cliff.
Why would he want to play after this year? They could sign Jimmy, which we talked about.
Yeah, that'd be my prediction.
It feels like Cooper Rush. It really, really does.
The Colts do feel like a team that, like, if you're a fan of them, I have a friend of mine, he's going to be pulling his hair out with how bad the season's been, but, like, I got to talk to him. Like, it feels like they're a team that's like, oh, the offseason, you know, we need a quarterback, and the best one available is Jimmy G. Jimmy G, like, that's all you hear about. And then, like you said, they'll go out and sign someone like Cooper Rush, and everyone's like, what the fuck is this? Like, you promised us a good – not to – again, that Cooper Rush is a bad quarterback, but definitely not the upper echelons that the Colts should probably have as their quarterback.
Colts fans just have to be praying this is the year they take – like, no matter where they finish in, like, the draft lottery and everything.
Got to draft one. A QB. Yeah.
Like, if they keep going this bad and don't draft, like, Bryce Young or C.J. Stroud or, like, Will Levis, I think Levis or Levis, some of the guys I've heard at the top, like, Colts fans might actually lose their minds.
Yeah, it's not good.
Sam Ehlinger isn't going to cut it, you know. He's a seventh-round pick. They can't just roll with him next year.
Mm-hmm.
Unless he's crazy good, but I don't see that happening. Carson Wentz stinks.
He's horrible. Cooper Rush
doesn't stink, which is still weird to me. It's not really making a lot of sense.
Mm-hmm.
And CeeDee Lamb doesn't stink either, and the Cowboys won a stinky game.
Yep. Not a great game. Like, I
think he's stinky game.
Caught maybe a second of this on Red Zone, and I'm like, I don't want to watch this. I saw CeeDee Lamb's touchdown, and that was the end of it.
Yeah.
I'm like, no, thank you.
Games that weren't stinky.
Surprisingly.
I owe the Seahawks an apology, because I thought they were going to be god-awful dog shit this year, and they were in that game against the 49ers. But, like, they are scrappy.
Geno Smith, I'm convinced, has sold his soul to the devil or something. Like, there's no way he should be playing. I don't know. Probably. That'll be the next
quarterback.
Colts, QB. But, yeah, who would have thought that Geno Smith and Jared Goff, they said it on Red Zone that they were the two highest scoring quarterbacks when it came to fantasy points, just like everyone predicted. You know, go run and pick up Geno Smith and Jared Goff if they're still available. But, like, that's insane. They combined for what? Over
crazy
600 yards, three touchdowns between the two of them. Both had like quarterback ratings.
Game, like the occasional game where you have like two quarterbacks and it ends up like a 60 to 60 or like 50 something game. And like each quarterback throws for like six touchdowns. I think Geno Smith was in one of a game like that in college. I forget who it was against. Baker Mayfield was one of the most iconic. I forget who was the other quarterback off the top of my head, but I love those college games every once in a while where each quarterback throws like six touchdowns and like 500 plus yards. It's the best. It's so funny. Only in college. It just never happened in the NFL.
No.
But yeah, Geno versus Goff was pretty fun. It was a crazy game. I was out to eat while we were watching the game, and like they just casually took it off one of the TVs. Like, I don't know if something happened with the broadcast or whatever. I assume so, but it was really unfortunate. I wanted to catch the end of that game. And the best part, Scorigami.
First time ever?
I love Scorigami. 48-45. I never thought there'd be one.
Yeah.
It's not like that outlandish of a score, but Scorigami. That's dope. There was like one throughout the game that they were like, oh, this is the highest odds, and then it got shattered, I think. And then we still ended up with a Scorigami, because they do the tweets, like, it'll be at the end of the third quarter, and be like, most likely Scorigami is so-and-so score with, like, 31.48% chance of happening or something. Whoa.
Oh, Jesus.
Whoa.
Making up words.
I'm making up words. This game was fun, though. Rashad Penny is, like, still weirdly good.
Yep.
He's just picking up where he left off last year. I don't know if I didn't notice this earlier, but you have a funny note about DK Metcalf and the stat line.
Yeah, carted off the field. Like, there were a couple kids at work that we were talking, like, that said that. They're like, a buddy of mine was like, thank God I didn't trade for DK Metcalf. He got carted off the field today. And I went out, looked on my phone, and I think it was Field Yates that might have had it, that was like, DK Metcalf was carted off to go take a bathroom break. So I'm like, I can't have to go back inside. Like, yeah, don't worry about him having a massive injury. He just needed to take a dump in between the games. Like,
Paul Pierce and Lamar Jackson.
Yep, I saw the Paul Pierce meme. Yep.
So DK Metcalf could run or
get
carted off.
Yeah.
Sit on the car.
Yeah, when you got to go, you got to go, I guess. But
what a crazy game. What a crazy, crazy game. And it was like the Lions did this without Amon-Ra St. Brown, DJ Chark, and DeAndre Swift, partially for DeAndre Swift. It's crazy. When did he leave the game? DeAndre Swift. Didn't he leave the game or did he not play?
No, he didn't even play. He left last week.
I felt like I was misremembering that.
Yep.
But yeah, they did it without three of their best offensive players and scored 45 points. Like, the Lions.
Great offense.
When they're not bad, terrible they defense. Score a bunch of points.
Yep.
I love the Lions. They're so funny to me.
Mm-hmm.
Chargers and Texans. This one was kind of had some trap game vibes to it, but the Chargers pulled it off with a nice little 10-point victory.
Yeah, got close in the end, but
yeah,
kind of took their foot off the gas for a second. Thankfully, for my sake, Austin Eckler finally decided to wake up, or rather the Chargers decided to wake up and finally use him like he was used last year, because I don't know why he was a couple times, the games I watched, just not looked at in the passing game. You know, the run game obviously was not used a ton there, but able to break out for three touchdowns, 60 yards, nothing really to write home about, but just a good game for him overall, and hopefully that kind of opens up the floodgates for him when it comes to production from a production standpoint.
Yeah, it really could. I mean, the guy just went off last year. We're kind of waiting for a game like this year, and we got it.
Yep. Same thing for Damian Pierce, too. Like, he was good.
He was awesome.
Yep.
The London game was fun.
Surprisingly.
We got a double doink. That's the biggest takeaway for me.
Yep. Will Lutz is good from 60, but if you add on that extra yard, like, it throws things all out of whack and everything goes to hell. Like you said, Justin Jefferson, he returned to form with 10 catches for 147 yards. Andy Dalton, surprisingly, was half decent in this game. Just 8 incompletions, 236 yards and a touchdown. Like, more than serviceable for a Saints team that definitely could use some good quarterback play of late with the uncertainty with Jameis Winston. But like you said, the double doink is what will be remembered. The fact that it hit, what was it, the left upright and then bounced off the crossbar. Yeah. Yep. One of those ones where it's like, it couldn't have bounced the other way and be in good shape. But
this time it's Cody Parkey walking. So Will Lutz could run. So
there you go.
It was a fun early morning game, though. I mean, I'll take that. Anytime I hear of a London game, I just expect a stinker. But
there's another one this week. I didn't know they were doing back to back.
Yeah, it's like
Giants and some. Is it Giants and Packers?
Yeah. Yep. Giants and Packers. That's okay. It. Speaking of the Giants, they're 3-1, which is weird. But they played the Bears, so it doesn't really count.
Yeah, the Bears are a fraud 2-2. Maybe as much as the Giants are a fraud 3-1. Although the Giants defense is pretty good. Six sacks, Cooper, six forced fumbles. Like
Cooper Kupp has more completions than Justin Fields has like pass completions, I think. I saw something like that today.
Strange stat.
Or receptions for
Cooper I was going to say this. Yeah, there's no way he has more completions than
Cooper Kupp, Justin Fields. I'll try to find the stat real quick.
That wouldn't surprise me because
yeah,
Cooper Kupp's got like 30 catches on a year.
Ari Myrov on Twitter. There's a wide receiver in the NFL with more receptions through four games than a starting QB has completions. Cooper Kupp has 42 catches. Justin Fields has 34 completions.
Jesus, and the Bears are 2-2.
I mean, like, why would you trade up for a player if you just don't trust him throwing the ball? Like, I just –
It's the same question he asked.
Chiefs influence with Ryan Poles coming in. I know he's, you know, not on the sidelines. He's just making the moves, but, like, what the fuck?
Yeah, it doesn't make any sense. I was going to say it's the same.
Justin Fields has not been good.
No.
But, like, you got
to – You got to trust him a little more, yeah.
You got to get some trust. Very weird.
Yeah, it's the Bears. What do you expect? It also factors into that they have really no offensive talent around him outside of the running backs. Like, name a receiver on that team that's half decent. They got N'Keal Harry back today, I saw. I'm pretty sure they activated him off of IR. Yeah. So, here we go. N'Keal Harry revenge game coming up.
Yeah, I mean, this team should be 0-4.
They really should be. Like,
they're so bad. They're so bad. Yep. I hate talking about them. So
they make me sad.
The Eagles and Jaguars. The Eagles
All right, this is a much better game.
They're the best team in the league.
I don't think you could argue that. I mean, they're definitely, I think, the most complete team. I mean, they've been blowing teams out the first couple games. Now this game, their defense does a lot of the work. Five turnovers. They make Trevor Lawrence look like last year's Trevor Lawrence with one pick, four fumbles, and four sacks. You know, his worst game of the season by far. And then they were able to kill Jacksonville on the ground. You know, Jalen Hurts and Miles Sanders run for a combined 172 yards and three touchdowns. Like, they find ways to win every single way, it seems like. They've done it a different way every time, and they are a very, very scary team four games into the season.
Yeah. Trevor Lawrence is not a reigning QB.
Nope.
The Eagles were, like, really, you know, I didn't project them to be as good as it looks like they're going to be, but, like, they're expected to be a good team. Like a couple weeks before the season, then they just casually traded for CJ Gardner Johnson and made their team even better.
So, they just took off. Yep.
Yeah. I mean, they're really good and for good reason. So we'll see if the Eagles can build the distance maybe this year, because it looks like they surely can right now. It'd be such a shame for a Philly team to taper off, though. I really hate that.
Yeah. You're definitely not rooting for that.
Yeah. Another stinky game, Jets and Steelers. Zach Wilson still not very good. His gritty was okay. I kind of expected him to have a goofy gritty, but at the same time, I'm not one to like judge. I have no rhythm, so
I don't. I funny you bring up the gritty. What are your thoughts on the gritty celebration? Because I had this.
It's. I'm not even kidding. It's my favorite celebration ever.
I
want to see Justin Jefferson and Ja'Marr Chase in particular, because I think they're the two best at it. Do it on every single touchdown they ever score for the rest of their careers, because it looks so cool when they do it.
Okay, so I had this discussion with a kid at work the other night, and I said the same thing. And I'm glad you brought up Chase and Jefferson, because my point from it was, and you know, everyone loves Mac Jones's, but let's be honest, Mac Jones didn't have the best gritty a couple weeks ago.
The best tweet about that was Tyler I.M. said he's Max doing the Yankee Doodle Dandy.
Yeah, but no, my thought of it, I think. Thought is, it's like, I feel like it's completely being overplayed now. Like, everyone and their mother's doing the gritty.
It's awesome, though. It's awesome.
If you can do, like you said, if it's Ja'Marr Chase and Justin Jefferson, you can actually do it. And there's another guy, I can't remember what team he's on, but there was somebody last year, too. It was like three guys that did them really, really well. Now everyone else just tries to put their own little stupid spin on it. And it's like, nope, it's leave it for Ja'Marr Chase, leave it for Justin Jefferson, who know what they're doing. Be more original and come up with some other sort of dance or something, because like the amount of just bad gritties that are out there is just kind of tough to watch. I guess we're on opposite sides of this, but
I get what you're saying, Ryan. It's time to bring the dad back.
Sure. Yeah. Or the Cam Newton. Somebody needs to do the Cam Kayvon Newton Superman into the dab.
Kayvon Thibodeau hit the Dougie after a false start.
All right, that's something different.
That was hilarious. But that's just like you just can't get mad about.
You need more celebrations like Jamal Williams had. I think it was Jamal Williams, right, with the Hingle McKringleberry, but he got flagged for it. So
I didn't even see that.
Yeah, it was 2 weeks ago. He did that, and he did one too many pumps, and they got him a flag. I'm pretty sure. Yeah, so,
I thought you were talking about something this week.
No, yeah, no, so, it was last week. You need more stuff like that. Like, be more original.
Oh,
like, that's what I need at least. But speaking this of, game, go for it. Go ahead. And
I was gonna say about running backs named Williams, Javonte.
Yeah, that's finished up. Oh yeah, the I was just gonna say the Steelers won. I keep talking over you. I apologize. The only reason to watch that was
I just couldn't hesitate to take the opportunity to segue from one Williams to another. So
it's fair. I kind of ruined that for you, but
no, it's all good.
All right. The only thing I was gonna say about the Steelers game is the Kenny Pickett era has officially begun. I think that was although he didn't look great, the right decision. Like, Mitch Trubisky is so bad, and that clearly there is just no faith in that offense when he's at the helm of it. So I know Kenny, Pickens and Pickett had a good connection. I think Pickens went for over 100 yards. So maybe there's some light at the end of the tunnel when it comes to the offensive struggles for the Steelers, but we'll have to wait and see on that.
We certainly will. I hate the Kenny Pickett on the Steelers because I like him and I hate the Steelers. So,
mm-hmm.
it's kind of a conundrum for me, but the Broncos were not boring for once this year, but they still lost. The Raiders and, Josh McDaniels are celebrating because Josh McDaniels' job might have been in serious jeopardy if they lost the stinky Broncos.
So, yep.
They won first of the year. Javonte Williams tore his, ACL, LCL, and something else got injured. I forget what the other thing was. So he's going to be out for a very long time, which is unfortunate. They brought on Latavius Murray off of the Saints practice squad. So, see if Latavius Murray has some streaming potential in fantasy. And as you have noted here, Josh Jacobs and Davante Adams went off.
Yes, they did. Josh Jacobs for 144 yards, 2 touchdowns on 28 rushes, 5 receptions along with 6 targets, 31 yards, and Davante Adams. Maybe there's some concerns about him. Those have been shut down. 9 catches for 101 yards, so just back to a typical Davante Adams Sunday afternoon. But like you said, good on the Raiders to get a win, because I'm with you. I think Josh McDaniels, especially after we talked about last week, he had the closed-door meetings with their owner. They had the players-only meeting, as you mentioned, with the Raiders players. There was some definite cause for concerns with that team. And, of course, with their schedule, I think they have the Chiefs coming up. So that's a game where if they lost this one, they could have very well be looking at 0-5 in the face. So good for them to finally get a win under their belts.
Yeah, it's kind of crazy to think of them potentially having been 0-5 after this week, but they won't have to worry about that. Bills and Ravens.
It's only really one thing to talk about with this game.
Ravens are weird. The Ravens are weird.
Yes, they are. They're the new Falcons. They can't hold on to big leads to save their lives. Blow a 20-3 lead again this time, 20 unanswered points. Outscored 13-0 in the second half, and then you have dumbass John Harbaugh once again deciding to go for it on fourth down on the goal line instead of giving the ball to the best kicker on the planet in Justin Tucker. Like, he did it, three or four times last year, starting it off again in week four this year. And then his – I don't know if you heard his explanation of, bringing analytics into it and everything and talking about, where they can put Buffalo on the field. Like, dude, just say you don't trust your defense. The Ravens' defense stinks this year, let's be honest. But just come out and say it, that, we couldn't get a stop all game in the second half.
The people who are like, oh, Buffalo would have just scored, so that's why they went for it. That is so brain dead.
They don't know that anything can happen.
So brain dead when you can get such easy free points, especially like you said, with the arguably the best kicker ever. Mm-hmm. It's so stupid. And I don't even like the Ravens, but it just bothers me from a common sense standpoint. Why are you doing this? Why are you letting analytics? I'm not anti-analytics, but dude, it's right in front of you. Take the lead. Mm-hmm. Just take the lead and go from there. Just shows he doesn't have faith in his defense and whatever else might have gone into the stupid-ass decision. But
we talked about it last week, too. You mentioned it multiple times that the Bills pretty much threw that game against Miami away with how many mistakes they made. You just saw that last week, how many times they fumbled the ball or made mistakes. You got to think that should have been in the back of their minds that, hey, if the Dolphins can do this, why can't we? Is there the Ravens? I don't, again, you're not anti-analytics. I am in this case. Like, you got the best kicker on the planet. It's what would have been 10 yards maybe for a field goal, probably a little more maybe if my math's off, which it is. But like, you shouldn't be betting against Justin Tucker. The guy just does not miss. Like,
yeah,
I don't get it. And again, like you said, how many times you got burned last year doing it, and the year before that, to do it again? Like, clearly has not learned his lesson in any capacity.
Yeah, he's just, it's crazy. Like, I know he puts out competitive teams like every year, but like, it just blows my mind some of the shit Harbaugh does that he has a job. Like,
yep.
If he didn't have the name, like the pedigree around his name, I don't know if he would. Like,
with these, like, these are fireable offenses. Like, you're legitimately costing your team wins, or at least games at this point. Like, who knows? Maybe this game goes into overtime and they lose there. But again, anything can happen. Like,
yeah,
like you said, take the points and hope to God your defense can make one stop at the end of the game.
Yeah, I agree. Chiefs and Bucks, Sunday Night Football. First game we, like, saw Brady kind of return to form.
Mm-hmm.
It wasn't enough because the Chiefs are really good. But, like, Brady looked good. It's, you know, it's been a tough season for him, especially with the new developments.
Yeah. Do you think that helps him moving forward or hurts him?
I think it's going to help him.
I do,
like,
too.
He's just going to be able to focus more. Like,
yep.
Regardless of what you
pissed off
say,
Brady is a scary Brady.
Pass, like, this is going to, you know, piss him off. He, you know, unfortunately, going to have to deal with a pending divorce, it sounds like. You know, not confirmed 100% yet, I don't think. But, and just, like, he's going to be able to focus now.
He's gonna, I think so. Yep, more. I'm now right there with, like, you.
Have another step in the divorce process, which is obviously a bad one.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe it'll just take a little bit of it off his mind. He'll be able to focus a little more. And partially, you know, he struggled in the past because his receivers have been in and out of the.
True. They're getting healthier. Yep.
And healthier. Chris Godwin was in the mix. Mike Evans was back from suspension. So, yeah, maybe we see Brady just go apeshit the rest of the year now. I don't know. But, like, it's something that's going to – I think there's going to be hills and valleys because it's going to be a distraction. It's not one of those things I think you can just, like,
play and push aside. Football. Yeah.
So,
yep.
We'll see what happens, though.
Mm-hmm. There's that, and then fun. Yeah, if you like points and, like, you know, the offensive ability, but if you're like me, you're not a big Chiefs fan, you aren't either. Like, this game, this was a scary game because there wasn't a lot the Chiefs did wrong in this game. They could throw the ball. I think it was the biggest surprise, like you mentioned. You talked about not wanting to start Al-Jair against the Bucs defense. Like, the Chiefs ran all over them. I mean, Clyde Edwards-Helaire, was it Isaiah Pacheco, rushed for 155 combined yards, a touchdown.
So that, his name's a mind, like, fuck, because, like, that's Pacheco. Why do they pronounce Pacheco? I don't understand.
But, like, they could run with them, too. Travis Kelce and Marcus Valdes-Scantling had good games, 155 yards combined for them. They could throw. They could run. Mahomes was doing his crazy flip plays, no-look passes. Like, the Bucs did not have an answer for anything they did. And, like, that's pretty scary. Against as good a defense as Tampa Bay has, the Chiefs can make them look as inept as they did. Like, the Chiefs might be fully back.
Yeah, I'm just like, he's going to keep doing it, so I'm going to keep hearing it, but I'm really sick of the ball washing for...
It sounds like I'm doing a show with my dad right now. It's so tough watching the Chiefs game with him.
Oh my God, only Patrick Mahomes can do this, because, like, he's the only one who tries to do it.
True.
That's why he's the only one that can do this, because nobody else does it. Like, that's part of the reason, and people just go like, oh, this is why he's the best quarterback in the league. Like, no. Like, him being a good quarterback makes him the best quarterback in the league, potentially. Not some stupid trick plays like, oh, no other quarterback can do this. This is why he's the best. Like, that's so stupid.
That's always, it's always bugged me because, like, the sidearm.
It's like, ooh, fancy football play. Like,
nope.
Oh, he's the best player in the league now.
Uh-huh.
Like,
God, well, my big thing is, like, anytime they bring up
just, like, evaluate a quarterback based on skill versus stupid, goofy fucking trick plays. Like, let's talk about Jalen Hurts and Josh Allen and Lamar Jackson being the best quarterbacks in the NFL versus talking about how Patrick Mahomes is good, really good, because he can hit Travis Kelce a bunch of times per game. And because
Travis Kelce is wide open, like,
does these stupid trick plays. Like,
Think
about it with a little bit more than fucking trick plays. I hate that shit.
Yep. It
drives me nuts.
I agree with you. Like I said, it's funny that you bring that up because I had the same argument with my dad on Sunday watching the game. He's the same way, can't stand it. And he said the same thing, the ball washing. I found that funny that you both use the same
fine.
Terminology.
Like,
but
do it. Like, I'm not trying to say, like,
yeah, I'm right there. I've said that to him before. I'm like, you got to
like,
admit
this
that.
Is the end all be all. Like, nobody else can do this. Like, he's the best for this reason. Like, fuck off.
Nope. well, that's always been my big thing too. It's like whenever they bring up, they're like, "Oh, the no look sidearm passes." He said, "It's like no, Matt Stafford was doing that in Detroit for as long as he was there. Like that was kind of his MO before Mahomes got into the league." And then, like, there was some poor tackling in that game by the Bucs too. A couple of the sacks that he avoided, the guys were just like falling down around him. It's like, all right, like you should have had this guy in the backfield. I know he's a superstar player, but I'm with you. Like, let's take it back a notch and kind of look at it in the big picture. Like, some missed tackles, some guys should have made plays that didn't. Like, what can you do?
It's interesting that you mentioned poor tackling, because the poorest tackle of the week came in the Monday Night Football game.
Yes, it did.
Deebo Samuel after the game clowning Jalen Ramsey on social media, which is really funny.
Yep. Can't stand that guy.
You can talk the talk when you walk the walk, and Deebo Samuel walks the walk and does crazy nonsense that is out of this world. And
I wish we had receivers like him. Yeah, we really do. This offense would be so much more fun to watch.
Excuse me, I'm going to go cry off screen.
Yeah. My roommate's cutting onions, dude, in the kitchen over there. Sorry.
Seriously, dude. I missed a good chunk of this game, though. It was another one of those games I couldn't really stay
up. Yeah, I didn't catch a ton of it because of work. But I like the biggest thing for me going back and watching some of the highlights and seeing just looking at the box score from afar, like the Rams are kind of frauds, especially offensively. Like their whole offense is Cooper Kupp.
My Super Bowl pick is not looking good.
You had the Rams, correct? Rams and Bills. Oh, right. Well, the Bills are still in good shape, yeah, but I don't know about the Rams. I don't think
the Rams are getting there at this point.
No, like I said, the way they're going, like if Cooper Kupp's going to be their entire offense, like throughout the season, 13, 11, they 4, no running 14.
Still either.
No run game. Like they don't want to get Allen Robinson involved for some reason. Their whole offense revolves around Cooper Kupp and Tyler Higbee. Like I made the joke. It's like, yeah, it's like it's white guys throwing to white guys. That's the Rams offense. But I've seen that joke made a couple of times. But
I saw the picture of the cop pulling over Peter Griffin and he has like the skin color.
Oh, yeah. I've seen that one. That's a great joke.
Matt Stafford throwing to his receivers because like, mm-hmm. he primarily just throws to the white guys.
I just don't get it. You spent money to bring in Allen Robinson. You don't want to use him. It makes no sense to me. So like, bizarre. They made OBJ work. I don't know why they can't do the same stuff with Allen Robinson. And
yeah, Robert Woods is really good too when he was there.
Yeah, it's true. I completely forgot about him. But
they don't use Tutu Atwell. Like they've made other receivers work. Like this is before Cooper Kupp became Cooper Kupp. Like Brandon Cooks is really good. Like it shows that like they can make other receivers work. And like you could also say before they didn't have Matt Stafford and all these different things, but it's just weird. It's just crazy.
Doesn't make a lot of sense.
How centric it is, but it works. You know, not very well here, but in terms of the connection, I mean, you got to trust the guy to throw the ball to him 19 times.
Absolutely. So. Yep. Definitely not gonna knock his ability. I mean, he is a great receiver, but like you think moving forward, like if you got to think they got to change something up because this should not be that hard of it. Again, it's Cooper Kupp. He's going to run wild on you. But like, if you make the focal point, trying to limit Cooper Kupp as much as you possibly can, and the Rams don't want to make any adjustments. Like they're not that great of a team offensively. Yeah. And Matt Stafford has not looked good to start this season. Maybe his elbow injury is kind of creeping up on him a little bit, but it's not been great. Maybe a Super Bowl hangover for them. Hopefully they can find their way out of it for your sake with your Super Bowl prediction.
Yeah. It'd be a pretty tough look if they don't.
Mm-hmm.
That's going to wrap it up for week 4 thoughts, though.
Yep.
The weirdest week, I think, of the season in terms of, like, some unpredictability, but just, like, weird, kind of boring games at times, too, especially the 1 o'clock slate in particular. But
yep.
On to week 5, the 1-3 Patriots versus the 1-3 Lions.
The battle of suck.
Yeah, I'm not. This is, like, in a different sense than last week, but I'm just not feeling very optimistic about this one for the Patriots because of how many points the Lions are scoring, even without two of their top receivers. Jared Goff looks really good.
Yep. Like, yes, he does.
On pace for his best season of his career, probably. Jamal Williams and DeAndre Swift are a good two-headed monster. Amon-Ra can be ridiculous when he's in the lineup, but I'm not entirely sure if he'll be back yet. TJ Hockenson proves he can step up too when guys like Amon-Ra and DJ Chark are out. He had like 13 catches or something for like over 150 yards and 2 touchdowns.
Yeah.
Crazy. Yep. They're pretty good. I mean, Josh Reynolds can step up. Khalif Raymond can step up at times. Not really much this year, but, you know, decent depth guy. They have Tom Kennedy, friend of Stu Finer. I always think it's anytime I see Tom Kennedy, I immediately think of Stu.
Yep.
Stu loves that guy. It's really funny. The interesting thing on defense for them is Malcolm Rodriguez, because they drafted him in the, out of, I think, Oklahoma State in one of the mid rounds. He's one of those guys, like, he's one of these mid round linebackers, but like really could explode
out kind of the burst gate. Onto the scene. Yeah.
I saw, like, reading some scouting reports, and he has. He's been their best defensive player, and they need that because their defense is bad. But he's taken on a lot of responsibility and handling it really well, so you got to watch for him. Alex Anzalone has been good. Sean Elliott has been solid. Tracy Walker, unfortunately, hurt, so that's going to, you know, make things hopefully a little easier for the Patriots. He's out for the year, I believe. I think it was an Achilles injury. Amani Oruwariye is really good. Hasn't had, like, a crazy start to the season, but he's a good player. And Aiden Hutchinson is the next real, like, other big notable name, because, you know, he's potentially going to win Defensive Rookie of the Year, unless Toss Gardner has something to say about that. They drafted Kirby Joseph, who's solid. Haven't really seen much of him this year, though. Got guys like Aleem McNeil, Julian Romeo Okwara, and we'll see what happens. You know, their defense has some names on it, but, like, hasn't really clicked. So they're kind of hard to predict in that sense, but they're putting up a ton of points. And right now, I don't really see how that's going to stop against this Patriots team.
Yeah, I mean, I'm kind of with you. I would feel a lot better if, you know, the Patriots – and the, you know, don't get it wrong, the offense has gotten better as the week's gone on. We kind of thought that might be the case, like little improvements as the weeks go. But I'm with you. Like, if this game's going to end up being a shootout, as you and I both have in our score predictions that we'll get to in a little bit. If the, you know, the Patriots, I don't think are going to be able to keep up with this offense. And I don't know if a Jared Goff led team is going to be able to walk into New England and put up 35 points like they're doing on the season. But, you know, the Patriots defense has shown, you know, they've been inept at times. The Ravens game, they just, you know, forgot how to cover, you know, big guys. Could very well see that happen again. You know, if TJ Hawkinson is the lone offensive weapon out there, he could be very well put up a Mark Andrews type of game. If St. Brown plays, you know, that's a top tier receiver that the Patriots, do they have a guy that can cover him? You know, if Jalen Mills is 100%, you know, does Jack Jones step up and have another good game? Or maybe, you know, does Jonathan Jones play well in that game? And like you said, they have two very good running backs. The Patriots have not been able to stop the run game at all this season. You know, whether both of them play, whether Jamal Williams just himself plays, I think both of them, one of them is going to spell trouble for the Patriots. So it's going to be a tough game. If they get out into a, you know, a race with this team, they're not going to be able to keep up.
Yeah, that's the vibe. Mm-hmm. That's really what I'm getting. The Rangers just scored.
I saw that. Yeah, I switched back over and
Swayman's sticking it up into that.
Yeah, it's not a great great trend here. I might just stay on it and see what happens.
Quick Bruins point. I'm not going to, like, make a huge deal about this, but, like, Jeremy Swayman's kind of let up a few soft goals.
That was weak. Yeah, right through the wickets and not a great look.
But
like I said, they can bring up Kincaid, and I can see the cool yellow pads and funny.
Kincaid got hurt.
Oh, did he? Crap. Well, that shows you how much I paid attention.
I think he's fine now, but he left the game.
All right.
Kyle Kizer. Still don't know if it's Kizer or Kizer came in, but yeah, sorry about the sidebar. Where were we?
No, no worries. Just like I said, I mean, the Patriots offense is going to struggle. Again, like you said, the Lions don't have a great defense looking at their stats. You know, they're first offensively in points per game, yards per game. Points per play, yards per play, and touchdowns per game. They're second in red zone scoring percentage when it comes to touchdowns. But on the flip side of that, their defense is last in points allowed, last in yards allowed, last in points per play, second to last in yards per play, and then last in red zone scoring when it comes to touchdown percentage, and last in touchdowns per game. So it's a beatable team. We've seen that for three times this season that, you know, teams have been able to beat the Lions. But again, the Patriots just with so many questions. And now with the potential of, you know, it looks like Bailey Zappi is probably going to play this game as well because Brian Hoyer did not practice today. They have brought in, you know, former Patriot quarterback. Now, I think on his third stint, Garrett Gilbert. Every time I see that name, I think of Gilbert Godfrey for some reason. Maybe it's just a double G. But, like, again, it's a game where it's like I just don't see the odds stacked up against the Patriots, how they can pull this one out. And that stinks because they get to play in their red uniforms, and I want to see them win in those uniforms. But right now it's just not looking like a great thing. Maybe with a full week of, you know, practice and being able to get things under his belt, Zappi comes out and puts together a solid performance. But there's just still too many questions with him right now. And it's going to be a work in progress until they get Mac back. And that's not a great place to be in right now.
Yeah, I'm with you. St. Brown didn't practice today. So Maybe he doesn't play, and that's
a huge could be big.
Patriots.
Yep.
DJ Chark, him real quick.
He did not practice either. He just looked there. Yep.
He's dealing with an ankle injury as well.
A lot of guys didn't practice for the Lions.
Yeah. So,
jeez, their entire offense, pretty much. Swift, Brown, Reynolds, Hawkinson, Chark, and Cephas.
Yeah,
Quintez Cephas, yeah, all did not practice today. Maybe that's just, you know, they're easing guys back into the first day of practice, but that's kind of alarming if you're a Lions fan.
Yeah, that segues us into the injury report quite nicely, actually.
Yeah,
Frank Ragnow is on it too, which is a yikes for them.
That's not good. Yeah, looking at the, like you said, the injury report for the did not practices: Chris Board, Evan Brown, as you said, Quintez Cephas, DJ Chark, John Kaminsky, TJ Hawkinson, Frank Ragnow, and Josh Reynolds, and Amon-Ra St. Brown, and DeAndre Swift as well. Swift, as you mentioned, dealing with that shoulder and ankle injury. For limited practice, as a Coyote Awusika, an offensive tackle, dealing with a hamstring injury. Taylor Decker, Jonah Jackson, Matt Nelson, and their kicker, Austin Seibert, all were limited. For the Patriots side of things, for the did not participate, Lawrence Guy, Brian Hoyer, DeMarcus Mitchell, and Jonnu Smith. So like I said, I think that pretty much gives us our answer on what direction the Patriots are going at the quarterback position. It's probably going to be Zappe. For the limited participation, Kyle Duggar, interesting to see Mac Jones's name on here right now. If Mac Jones is limited all week, do you play him in this game or do you go with Bailey Zappe?
I'm still in the camp of I don't want to rush Mac back. And I saw somebody say that was at practice that he was hobbling. So, Yeah, that gives me more reason to not want to see Mac Jones. So,
yep. And again, like you just saw Brian Hoyer go out with an injury because you couldn't protect him last week. Like, you don't want to rush Mac Jones back, especially if you're rotating in right tackles, you know, if they decide to go. Because I saw Marcus Cannon, I'm pretty sure it was signed to the official 53-man roster today. So he is here.
Yeah.
And he probably, with, you know, the elevation, wouldn't be surprised if he gets a start. Again, just to send a message to Isaiah Wynn. For the rest of the Patriots injury report, Raekwon McMillan, Jacoby Myers, Jalen Mills, Adrian Phillips, and Isaiah Wynn. Speaking of him, they're all limited to practice as well. Wynn dealing with a hip injury. For me, I think that injury should be put on there is, you know, just get your head out of your ass and learn how to play the position you've played probably your entire career, or close to your entire career. Like I said, you're getting quarterbacks killed. And we're on
limited in brain function these days.
That's a good one too. Yeah, to take that. But yeah, I mean, that's kind of the big thing. Again, he answered that question, you know, if Max at 50% or whatever, do you go with him or Zappe, or if Hoyer can go? I think we're in agreement. It's probably best to play Zappe and have Gilbert come in as the backup, which is a tough place to be in, but that's where we're at right now. Again, you know, how much do you trust this Patriots offense to be able to go against this Lions defense? It hasn't been great. You and I both kind of agree.
Sonika just got buried again.
Again?
This is another Bruin sidebar. Like, more and more I watch Jack Sonika, I just don't see an NHL player, and he's going to make the team.
Not a lot. Yeah, that's impressive. Mm-hmm.
He just too much of a baby deer out there to me.
He's kind of there, I've noticed. Like,
he doesn't have a lot of impact, and that's what Jim Montgomery talked about. And
let's see how bad this hit was.
He got bundled.
Oh, his head was down.
Yeah,
gotta get your head up. Even I know that, and I've never played a day of hockey in my life.
Yeah, I mean,
well, I guess he was going after the puck, so.
He's very unspectacular to me, and that's fine because he's a young player, but he just does really nothing for me, nothing in the corners, nothing in terms of scoring chances. Like every time I hate to crap on the guy, but every time I see him with a scoring chance, I'm just not expecting him to score. The scoring touch, especially
I NHL, think that's fair,
hasn't been there.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't know, maybe it comes back or shines through a little bit in the regular season, but so it looks like he's probably going to make the team, but
we'll out of necessity, probably. No, I'm with you. He probably wouldn't pass through waivers. Like, some team would take a chance on him.
Yeah.
The only other Patriots question, too, I had, exactly. He probably answered this question as well, but with a couple of roster moves, Marcus Cannon and Jamie Collins back, any chance we see either of those two guys suit up? As I mentioned, Marcus Cannon is on the 53-man roster, so I think that's a shoe-in, but Jamie Collins currently on the practice squad. Does he make any sort of appearance at all with, like I said, how bad the linebacker play has been and maybe trying to help stop a guy like Jamal Williams or even Swift if he plays?
Yeah, I have to imagine so. And Jamie
That's true. Yep. A former line going up against his former team. If he plays, you know, how much of an impact, if any, do you think he makes?
nothing.
Okay. Fair enough.
I gotta be honest. Like,
all right. Well, that's where I'm at too. It's like,
I feel bad for people that are getting excited that Jamie Collins is back.
That's, I mean, I think the first reaction should have been like, again, really? Like, that was mine. I'm sure it was yours too. Like, we're bringing Jamie Collins back again. Like, there's nobody. And again, I think that goes back into the roster construction and how, you know, piss poor they've been when it comes to particularly that position. You know, we talked about at the draft preview, all the linebackers they had in this year's draft and, you know, middle of the round guys that could have picked up. You just saw one against the Packers. I can't remember which one they drafted. I wanted to say Nakobe Dean, but that's not.
Quay Walker.
Thank you, Quay Walker. I got the two of them confused. But yeah, you had plenty of options to bring in young, talented guys that have all played pretty well in their NFL career so far. And you bring back, 33, 34-year-old Jamie Collins? Like,
yeah.
That's where we're at with this team. Just bring on the old guys and hope to God they can work.
Yeah, it's so goofy. It's just, this is going to be such an unpredictable game because their defense is in the gutter and their offense is amazing. So, it's really hard to get a read on this, but
well, the Patriots are the flip side, I feel like. Really, sorry to cut you off. Yeah. That was kind of my last thought.
It's fine. It's fine.
It's good that you brought that up. It's kind of a tale of two opposite teams because you could say the Patriots' defense has been pretty solid at times this year, but their offense has been horrible. So, which team do you go with here? And you and I are both leaning towards the road team, it would appear.
It's the Lions. It's,
yep.
I can't pick a rookie quarterback to beat the best offense in the league. It doesn't work. It doesn't line up. It would be goofy in my mind.
Yep.
I have the Lions winning 34-20. I think because the defense is so bad for the Lions, the Patriots are going to put up some points mainly on the ground, but it's just not going to be enough. I think the Lions are going to put up points, especially if Monroe's back. But like they proved even last week, you know, Seahawks aren't a great defensive team, but like they can put up points without their top guys. So
true. Very true. I'm with you. I have the Lions 28-25. I think this is maybe not a blowout per se, but I feel like this is one of those games where you look at it and you kind of afterwards, you're like, oh, you had all these things kind of building after the Packers game. You know, you felt a little better about that one, given how it ended, you know, how they looked. You know, they were able to shut down Aaron Rodgers for, you know, a decent chunk of the first half. And then this game, they come out and kind of undo all those things. A game that they maybe should win because they're at home. And again, it's a Lions team that's still trying to figure some things out. But like you said, I just can't get behind Billy Zappi yet. Like, it's still a work in progress, as I mentioned. Like, you're going through the motions right now. If you're going to win the game, it's going to be, like you said, on the ground. And I just don't know if they're going to have enough to, you know, if they get down early, they're not going to be able to keep up when it comes to the run game.
I am with you. Bruins just scored again. And guess
this game's wild.
Guess which line was on to set the goal up? The second line, baby.
Nice. First line.
Pastrnak to Riley, baby.
All right. That works.
That's going to help Mike Riley in his standing in the hierarchy on the left side a little bit. Maybe the right side if they flip him over there a little bit. But not quite down in the dumps is like expecting a boring game. Like in terms of last week against the Packers, kind of expecting like a low scoring game, even though it was kind of high scoring in a way. Mm-hmm. But like I'm just low on this game because I just don't think Bailey Zappi is going to like light the world on fire. That's fine. But like it's just going to be one of those games where like they'll have moments, but I think the Lions are going to be too hard to keep up with offensively. So
that's, yep, I'm right there with you.
Very unfortunate, but we'll see if we're wrong. I mean, it is the Lions, so.
True, they have found ways to lose games before.
Yeah, I can't really say, like, this is a lock that they beat the Patriots, but I'll lean towards the Lions here. I don't think their offense is going to hit the off button yet. So we'll see, though. We'll see, because like I said, they are, in fact, the Lions. Maybe Bailey Zappi's just nasty.
Maybe. I'll tell you what, I feel, I know he hasn't played great this year, but I feel a hell of a lot more comfortable if this was Mac Jones. Maybe that's too stupid to say because that's obvious, but like getting into a shootout with Mac Jones against the Lions and the worst defense in the NFL, I think I feel much better about than, like you said, it keeps coming back to the third string rookie quarterback element. And, you know, is he ready to get into a big, big offensive game? But this could be an item with you. I don't think so.
Yeah. But I think that's going to wrap it up. What do you think?
I think so. I agree with you.
All right. Well, that's going to wrap it up for episode 114 of the Savager and Christ Sports podcast. Again, like we talk about most weeks, the growth has been crazy. Like it just keeps getting crazier with how many people listen to the show. And the records we're breaking with our listenership. Just hit over 40,000 downloads on an episode. Like, I genuinely can't believe that.
Yep.
We're about to hit on another one. So, like, people, like, thank you. I don't know, like, it's breaking my brain because I didn't even expect this to happen on this new ever since we joined this new platform with the Megaphone platform. It's crazy. But thank you so much. Like, it really does mean a lot. And stick around because it's going to be fun. We got hockey season coming up, so that's good. And hopefully, you know, the Patriots can win some games before the schedule gets unbelievably difficult. So
yeah, that's right.
Yeah. And the Celtics will be good. They signed Blake Griffin. So
they did. We didn't even mention that. Yeah, that's
mention that.
Maybe talk about that a little bit on the next show because we're kind of out of time here.
We're all guy Blake.
Yep.
But yeah, thank you so much for listening. You can find us wherever you find your podcasts. You can give us a rating on Spotify or Apple. You can follow me on Twitter at @Mike_Craddy. You can follow Ryan at @Ryan_Salvaggio. And you can follow the show at Sound Craddy Pod. You can follow us on TikTok as well if you throw our names in the search bar. And you follow all the Full Press Twitter accounts and download the Full Press app. Check out all the other shows and good stuff like that. It's all good content. But yeah, stay safe, stay healthy, be nice to people, all that good stuff. Hopefully we'll be talking about the Patriots win next week, and we'll talk to you then. Peace out. Hockey season, Bruins season opener, and the preview next week. Looking forward to it. Peace.